chair person, members of the committee. It's a great privilege to present to you the South African Revenue Services annual report for the financial year 2015-2016. We have once again reached that time of the year where we reflect on our performance as an organization, including an assessment of effectiveness and efficiency in how we endeavor to serve the government and the citizens of South Africa. Chairperson, we have four quadrants that define who we are. Firstly, the mandate. Our mandate is very clear: to collect all revenue due, ensure optimal compliance with tax and customs legislation, and provide a customs and excise service that will facilitate legitimate trade as well as protect our economy and society. Similar to other businesses, SARS operates within an internal and external environment that has to be resilient and agile.
I mean, sorry, is half an hour okay? Maximum 45 minutes.
It goes without saying that if you look at the quadrant, our mandate, our mission, our people who are key and our values, it goes without saying that we have to accomplish this within the legislative mandate, embodied in our mission, vision, and our three compliance levers, namely service, education, and enforcement. We also completed a focused effort in reporting year to revisit and refine our values as depicted on page 11 of the annual report. Furthermore, SARS has developed an integrated business model as seen on page 16 and strategic focus as seen on page 19. And in line with our new operating model to deliver our mandate to government and the Republic of South Africa, where we identified and incorporated components that have the biggest impact of our national ability to enable wealth creation in South Africa through the contribution of the national development. As it's important, therefore, to underscore the importance of the National Development Plan and where SARS fits in the 2030 remains the primary focus framework for government and all its related entities. Direction and outcomes pursued by the Southern Government and the NDP 2030 affect how the Southern Revenue Services carries out its mandate. One of the critical organs of state will continue to effectively and efficiently carry out our mandate to collect the revenue required to fund government programs. We'll diligently play our role to facilitate legitimate trade and travel through the country's borders to grow the economy and protect it from illicit trade activities. In the quadrants that we have in the slide, there is a strategic focus, legislative policy principles and standards, internal capabilities that we speak about, and a strong stakeholder relationship and partnership that assist us to create trade, but most importantly, enable wealth creation in South Africa, to be able to distribute and grow the economy through the National Development Plan. We'll support government efforts to increase employment opportunities, improve conditions for small businesses, and help improve government performance across government. Who are our key stakeholders? Because this is a very important element. Our key stakeholders are employees, Department of Finance, TTI, government in its totality, taxpayers, traders, intermediaries, and partners, and the last also is the third-party data providers. Strong stakeholder relations and partnerships are at the center of our long-term value creation and value chain. Therefore, SARS will continue to engage stakeholders to ensure alignment around objectives and pro-creative suggestions around tax policy matters. Internally, SARS is structured into nine distinct segments, which I've mentioned. At the core of all this is our service strategy. Taxpayers are not obligated to submit a return if their total salary for the year before tax is not is more than 350,000. Tax is only effective on income exceeding 73,650 if you are younger than 65 years old, and 114,800 for years 65 to 74, and 128,500 for those who are 75 years and older. Chairperson, I would like to, and members of the committee, to talk about our integrated business model. It's a business slide, but it provides the committee with the various products offerings that we have. PIT, CIT, VAT, fuel levy, and the like. On the left side is the channels through which all these activities are taking place. Branch network, mobile, footprint, contact center, and e-file. But equally, on the right-hand side, is capabilities that we have within the organization, which means we have the detector dog unit, which helps us to be able to deal and address with illicit trade and products. We also have automated processing of the systems, and of course, skilled professionals to be able to deal with a number of issues that affect any tax administration anywhere in the world. This integrated business model aligns the internal value chain and capabilities of SARS to best optimize the channels through which our tax products are administered. I wish to point out that the initiation of a new operating model was already underway in 2014-2015 to eliminate duplication and improve efficiencies of our business practices. What is our legislative and policy framework, principles and standards? We have the tax system, we have the World Customs Organization, we have the acts which SARS administers. We have governance and oversight issues. We also look into the international best practice through the OECD. Legislative and policy frameworks, principles and standards inform our ability to leverage on our collaborative partnership locally as well as internationally, with government and businesses to enable inclusive fiscal citizenship. This above figure demonstrates some of the sample examples of our collaborative approach. With respect to the World Customs Organization, utilizing the advanced electronic manifest information to allow risk assessment. As far as the OECD is concerned, designed common reporting standards for countries and tax authorities to globally connect. On the acts, there are a number of them that we administer, and indeed, of course, from a policy perspective, there are two key stakeholders at the top, that is Department of Trade and National Treasury. Chairperson, SARS had to balance the three levers to execute its mandate. We said our mandate is the effective and efficient collection of revenue, but it is underpinned by the three key pillars. These levers are service, education, and enforcement. This will enable you to comprehend the extent to which we are able to balance the levers in executing our mandate. SARS commissioned a study to gauge public opinion on tax compliance, while simultaneously looking at the drivers of tax compliance on an annual basis to inform various other key initiatives. The survey, most interestingly, yielded an attitude to tax compliance index of 73%. We wish to inform you that 22 new positions have been approved and budget allocated to counter rate erosion and profit shifting. And there's additional information that is on page 11 and page 18 respectively. Chairperson, let me quickly, because of the time constraint that you have given us, get to slide number 10, 2015 performance on PIT filing season highlights. It is without doubt and it's with full knowledge that collection exceeded 1 trillion and 1 trillion and 70 billion, which comprises 8.5% growth of the economy. When you looked at 2015, we collected 996 billion, and 2016 we collected 1 trillion and 70 billion. Tax to GDP revenue ratio, we are proud to indicate that it is the highest level in 6 years of 26.2%. E-filing is over 90% for the last 3 years, over 95% returns assessed in 3 seconds, 66% increase in outstanding return submission, and we are proud to say we have 99.6% return files electronically, and 95% refunds paid in 72 hours. Honorable members, to reflect back on the challenges facing the challenging years SARS has in the country in the past years, I'm proud to say that we have concluded the financial year on a high note. We are proud of the fact that we are once again able to contain costs, notwithstanding increased processing volumes and expanded infrastructure. We managed to keep our expense at 96 cents for every rand we collected. This is well within the international benchmark of 1% of revenue. PIT remains the biggest contributor of revenue income at 36.4% and increasing by 10% from the previous. VAT revenue increased by 7.6% and CIT with 3.6% compared to the previous year. As we already know, honorable members, and have experienced, SARS filing season remains one of the major highlights of the fiscal year and was as yet again a significant success. For a third year in a row, filing compliance levels, as I've indicated, are over 90% were maintained for PIT. Approximately 1.8 million refunds, amounting to 15 billion, were paid out, of which 95% were released within 72 hours. Even though the submissions of outstanding returns has grown by 66%, more focus will be placed on the reduction of outstanding returns by clearing up and cleaning up the various registers whilst implementing a refined approach to tax pay. Performance context. Customs revenue collected 197.6 billion. Taking a critical look at our strategic performance has enabled us to reflect on the progress made during the previous year. The transformation journey we undertook in the tax reform has inspired us to strive for new levels of excellence. SARS is committed to improving its service levels to taxpayers, educating the public about their tax compliance obligations and applying the high right intensity of enforcement actions where non-compliance is evident. The slide above illustrates from infographics that we have 97.5% electronic tax submissions, 100% electronic submission customs declaration. That's what we've done in the year. And we have 98% electronic tax payments, and also 97% first call resolutions of queries. But what is very interesting, Chairperson and members of the committee, is that CIT assessment is done within less than a third, 0.3 of a day. That's about 6 hours. In 6 hours, we do that. Lots of improvement that has taken. And we hope that with this instrument at our disposal, that the CIT company income tax can be done much better and more efficiently. And we want to indicate that we have dealt with 90% of the queries in 7 minutes. I've indicated that customs collected 197.6 billion. That comprises 18% of the total revenue. When reflecting on our achievement on the strategic outcome to increase customs compliance, I would like to draw your attention to the following achievements. Customs revenue collected for the year resulted in a deficit of 120 billion. This was mainly due to constrained growth in taxable imports and consequently reduced import debt. On the positive side of this, SARS managed to exceed the total revenue target, excluding customs, by 1.2 billion. with regards to Customs Control Act and Customs Duty Act, we established the new Customs Act program, the NCAP, which involved the translation of legislation into business and design specification requirements to inform the changes necessary for the current systems, policies, and procedures. In addition, the manifest process functionality, which is a platform for effecting the changes required in terms of the new Customs Control Act, has been developed and tested. These changes relate to cargo reporting and goods management, and they will enhance supply chain security, address non-compliance of cargo reporting, enable effective goods accounting, and protect the South African economy for illicit trade. In terms of the preferred trader program, SARS engaged 92 new clients, completed 16 audits, which brought the total number of the clients participating in the program to 670. The preferred trader client volume for 2015-2016 represents 29.34% of the total customs volumes and exceeded the target of 25%. Management agency, SARS has also developed and tested an automated state warehouse solution for the effective tracking, management, and accounting of goods in the state warehouses comply with the new Customs Act and state warehouse policy. The solution was successfully implemented as a pilot at 4 border posts warehouses. SARS continue to work with the Department of Home Affairs on the border. Management agency has seconded 93 on the border management agency, was seconded 93 staff members to the project office to support the Border Control Operation Coordinating Committee, the BCOCC. Finally, in relation to increased customs compliance, I would like to mention the expansion of SARS detector dog. SARS has deployed 35 detector dogs and handlers to the Lebombo, Nakop, and Floyd Draft border posts. We have also provided expert support to neighboring countries towards border protection by means of detector dog units. You can find this information in detail on page 31 to 37 of our annual report. We'd like to speak about customs compliance in the various 5 categories. Customs revenue collected, the target was 198.5 billion. We achieved 197.6 billion. Potential preferred trader volumes, 25%, we achieved 29.34. Cargo declaration, 11%, and we achieved 13.14. But it is important, Chairperson, as we speak of the ratios, the percentage of trade that have been audited with a view of obtaining preferred trader status. For the year, the quarter submitted declaration consisting of 26,647,826 lines. Of this total, 7,817,228 were submitted by potential preferred traders. Audits are done on clients to determine their potential preferred trader status. For this year, 31 audits were finalized, culminating in 271 finalized audits since 2010-2011. As a percentage of cargo declaration targeted, the main reason for a higher than estimated ratio are the following. One, we adjusted the adjusted exchange rate is resulting in an increase of the number of alerts. The rate of exchange was adjusted from 10 rands 80 in April 2015 to 15 rand 50 in March 2016. This has resulted in more consignments being targeted. Secondly, an increased focus on clothing and textile resulted in new tariff heading 6212-10008 added to the risk engine in October 2015. This allows for additional risk rules and alerts. With respect to a percentage of increase in electronic manifest submissions, the number of electronic manifests submitted for the year was 1,529,247 compared to 1,628,000 submitted in the previous year. The underperformance is mainly due to the fact that there was a decrease in electronic manifests from air and sea. SARS has no control over trade or manifest volumes as these are influenced by policy and economic climate. This negative trend potentially reflects a global trend towards larger consignment transactions size. There can be an increase in the volumes of cargo moved across the border, but a decrease in the number of manifests submitted as carriers of goods or freight orders aimed at logistical inefficiency. Chair, I would like to move to slide number 14. Tax revenue collected and tax compliance, which is outcome. Tax revenue collected is 172.4 billion, which comprises of the following: personal income tax 389.3 billion, 10% increase; company income tax 194.4 billion, 3.6% increase; VAT 281.1 billion, a 7.6 increase. And we've indicated that personal income tax filing moved to 90% over the 3-year period. And we've indicated that we have 1.8 million audits conducted, and that covered 15.12 audits covered. That as a percentage of revenue collected, I mentioned 9%. In last year's annual report, we reported that we are reviewing our method of measuring compliance, metrics and associated baselines for CIT. In doing so, we realized that the integrity of our taxpayer register have a bearing in our compliance figures. As reflected in our most recent strategic plan and annual performance plan, we have noted our continued focus in this regard. Our commitment to increase compliance is accentuated by the new metrics included in the latest annual performance plan regarding both filing and payment compliance. In terms of the payment compliance, the debt-to-revenue ratio improved slightly from 9.1% to 9.01%, very insignificant but very important. This represents a growth in value terms of 6.5 billion of debt attributed mainly to an increase of overdue debt of income tax and debt. We collected 14.7 billion of overdue debt during 2015-2016 financial year, which is a slight improvement compared to the previous. Debt write-offs decreased by 7.5 billion compared to the financial year that we have gone past, while debt under dispute continues to be a challenge for us. Moving to our efforts to ensure correct declarations, we conducted 1.8 million audits during the financial year. Critical to SARS efforts to improve compliance is the public's attitude to compliance. SARS commissioned a study to gauge the public opinion on tax. While considering the drivers of tax compliance to inform various key stakeholders, the survey yielded an attitude to tax compliance index at 73. So we're sitting at 73 to 75 quartile. I must pause here and say we have not been benchmarking ourselves because other tax administrations have a different format of benchmarking tax compliance. They are done in accordance to the type of tax, whether it's CIT, VAT, so we have used one single model. The HMRC in particular uses that particular model, and therefore we'd like to also to move to that and see how best we can be able to measure ourselves with our peers in the world. Chairperson, tax compliance strategic measures that I've spoken about. Improving dispute resolution management processes, education and outreach. We have empowered 257 taxpayers. We want also to expand our contact center, wherein we scoop the contact center management group award. We want that. We are indeed confident that we are delivering taxpayer service and improving our service channels, there is significant progress in the implementation of a single registration process. We also are very much aligned to modernizing estate and deregistration process, because that's where at times things fall within the cracks. Working with the DIT office and be able to have an understanding as to what are the issues at hand. Provide advice and guidance relating to the interpretation of the law administration by SARS. Finally, would like to inform you that the World Bank's report on ease of doing business, paying taxes in particular, South Africa is ranked among the top 10 in the world. With respect to ease and fairness of doing business, strategic measures, we had an uptake in electronic submission. Our target was 98.57. Uptake in electronic custom declaration, perhaps a little bit pedantic, we say 99.99, and we say 99.99. We didn't want to round it up to 100 because we did not tell you the truth. It's not necessary. Processing time for PIT returns, 30 minutes. We did not perform that well precisely because we overstepped. We had 134 minutes. Precisely because PIT is personal income tax, we needed to be very careful as to how we are able to assess this. Processing time for CIT returns, less than a day, we've done that in about 6 hours. Processing time for VAT returns, in 1 day, we overshot. We could not meet that target because VAT returns is an issue that we are indeed needing to put more effort in order to bring it down to acceptable levels. VAT refunds process in 14 days. We put 74%. And I'm looking at the member of committee. Well, our target was 74% and we're sitting at 2.42. And we'll be able to explain this because it is important from the metrics that we report the status quo as it stands. It's an area that we are very much aware of, but precisely we need to re-emphasize the fact that we are going through a process of a VAT fraud processes in the country. And that in itself has an impact, but at the same time, we'd like to enable companies and individuals to have their VAT refund nine times. So it's something that we take, and we are indicating that it has a negative impact. On outcome number 4, cost effectiveness, internal efficiency, and institutional responsibility, working within the key stakeholders to achieve efficiencies on our value chain, we're improving our human resource processes. Cost of revenue collection has dropped to 0.96%. Progress on migration of SARS accounting practices to GRAP is taking place, and capital investment in MIT. Finally, Chairperson, employee engagement with our staff, we've seen better improvement from 64.5% to 7.5%. Leadership Effective Index, 87.7, we achieved 87.38. So there was a decline precisely because there was a new change of processes within the organization, including new leadership within the structure of the organization. Equity Demographics, 72%, we achieved 74.55. Gender Equity, we moved from 47.2 to 48.5. Equity disability. This is a problem that is beyond our control. The target is to have 2.06%. We're sitting at 1.18. We cannot enforce people to be able to declare the state of a disability. But Chairperson, is something that we're working with, and we're trying to see that people should declare in a situation which is all-encompassing and it is also amenable to people to declare a cost-to-revenue ratio between 1 and 1.2%. We are doing very, very well at 0.96. Auditor General report. We have a clean audit. With that report, thank you very much.
Right.
Andy. Oh, yes. Oh, sorry, yes. So you know the Honda in which you go. I'm not going to refer it to you. You just know the order. No fighting, please. Right, Mr. Mania, don't you want to start?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to deal with four issues in respect of silence. The first issue that I want to deal with is the controversial issue surrounding the investigation into Jones McQuaid.
You see, let's deal with the annual report, right? And then what we will do is we'll focus specifically on that. The questions you have asked, I think, have got to everybody. I gave it to everybody, right? And the minister replied, I didn't know this. As a matter of procedure, until yesterday, David, you hadn't mentioned to me that you had asked some questions to the minister in the House, overlapping with the questions. Right? I know what you're going to argue. The answer is the minister doesn't fully answer your question. Right? So you have the right to say that. So I'm saying, let's deal with the annual report. Let me remind them this. Tell you, I'm being serious about this. It's very hard to know how we proceed. Because really, all committees are starting. How do we actually? You see, we went to look at the annual report and the last quarter. And the last big triple R of the class. So we're not going to look at the last quarter. We're going to take it. Plus, you have formally replied already. Antoine, thank you very much for being a very good commissioner. We must be fair. People are good when they're good and when they're not good. You're very good in the way you reply. On this specific matter, we allocate enough time. If you like, so from our last committee meeting. So it's like, did we have that close out of the quarterly report? So we give enough time to, let's focus on the annual report. It doesn't flow from that. It happened in this financial year. But we'll give you the chance, no problem. So please, members, can we focus on the issues that flow from the annual report? Thank you.
Chair, I was in fact about to just, I think that is the way to go. Separate issue, because I have a number of questions for the FIC and for SARS.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
On the SARS annual report for the presentation, I'll be relatively brief. In the annual report, Commissioner, you make reference to specialized I wonder if you could just outline how many specialized units are under SARS control, what their purpose is, and roughly how many people are employed in those specialized units. That's the first question. Then in respect of the SARS or allegations surrounding the so-called SARS rogue unit, on page 73 of the document, which refers to the SARS Advisory Committee, you report that during the financial year, the Advisory Committee reviewed the allegations and made recommendations on the best way, I quote, to prevent such from occurring again. And so my question is, did the SARS Advisory Committee a report making recommendations in respect of this matter? So that's the first question. And if it did so, what were those recommendations, and are they or were they implemented? So that's on the SARS rogue unit. Then lastly, on the whole question of the company called Interfront, which appears regularly in the annual report. I wonder if you could just brief us on what its purpose is and whether I understand correctly that there is an investigation undergoing in respect of that company and what the scope, at least, of that investigation will be. Thank you. The real substance will be
I know that you said we would just ask questions that relate mostly to the annual report as presented by the Commissioner. But there are certain things that are already in the public domain, which is quite important, Commissioner, to try and understand. I mean, from what is coming up from the report, it looks like there are quite a number of efforts being put in place to make sure that the integrity and standing of the South African Revenue Services is asserted. So now what I would want to just understand is how are these continuing allegations of individuals within SARS, which sometimes land in the public domain, affect your ability to deliver and build a revenue service that could inspire the confidence of citizens? I think it's quite important. But the other important issue is, you know, when you spoke of that, you did indicate that you are not increasing your VAT collections as much as you would want to because of fraud on the other end. What are the measures that are being put in place to try and handle those? You know, but also, just to also understand, like the issue that I raised on some of the things that are out there in the public domain, is there measures, because I would imagine, Commissioner, that these things would potentially constrain how you function and operate as a tax collector. Is there a way in your own organization where there are internal engagements, you know, or some any detection mechanisms to try and address or attend to these things? Because when they land out there, they sometimes send the signal that there could be leadership issues within the organization. So just to assess and clear the thing in the public domain so that people could at least have an understanding that this is a tax collector that they could all trust with their monies year on year. Thanks.
Thank you. Next, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think you caught me by surprise because you gave us orders after we have raised our hands and you. But
let me explain basically. If the committee wants to change its mind, it's fine, but I thought we're focusing on the annual report first. I'm going to how it works. And then we're going to look. But if you want to speak on that, I'll call on you immediately so we can move on to the next issue. The thing is that we mustn't make this an issue about a set of individuals. That's not the issue. We are having a normal. Can I clarify? Firstly, in the first instance, nobody was summoned here. We simply requested. There's a routine meeting. The commissioner was going to be here. The DG and the treasury was going to be here. We requested the commissioner, the director of the FIC, to be here. Normally, you summon somebody if, in Parliament, the legal person, what's his name, Mr. Advocate Jenkins, confirmed, if you are not getting cooperation. Or if you anticipate you're not going to get cooperation. Otherwise, you request. So the commissioner is going to be here anyway. And then I phoned Mr. Murray, I sent a letter out, and he immediately said he's fine to come. So no one's been fine. So what I'm saying in short is, we could have reversed the thing, but then it's emphasizing one issue rather than dealing with the annual report. And it's very interesting that some of the issues that we will deal with later are dealt with in a way, fully marked, very, very interesting thing. Forget the specific matter. How in general do you deal with corruption within your right to allegate it as corruption? So you get the drift. But if the majority overrules the chicken with nothing?
No,
so shall we stay with that? So
no.
Do you want to come in later or do you want other
generations? No, I'll still continue, Chair.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, fine.
And I'm not going to defy you.
Not if you defy me, please. I just say it. My job is good.
I agree. I'm comfortable with what you suggested. But, Chair, I was looking at the slide number 3 of the presentation. Where SARS is talking about the values, the integrity, the fairness, respect, honesty, and all those things, they are directing me to what you want us to talk later about, and I expect that I'll come on the second one to speak about those specific matters, because I think those things that are happening in the public domain are affecting the mandate. We have been standing firm as public reps, being proud of the work that SARS is doing, and these things are happening. And then I will come back to it. But Commissioner, when you made a presentation, you referred us to page 35. You were talking about the document and the scanner. I think So I know we're talking about 2015-16 annual report, but I'm going to be Bindi just for a second. When she was so interested, and she still is, and she got what the.
Is at the Pan-African Parliament.
Pan-African Women something. She's the Secretary General.
What is it called?
For members of Parliament, especially for the
And my course is a special study leave. I don't know what a PhD of her caliber is studying, but it shows you, Tazi, you're never too old to study, right? She's got a PhD, she's written several books, and she's still studying. I hope, Tazi, you don't forget that.
I'm just asking for interest because I remember when we spoke of the scanners at the there was a commitment. Hence, I'm saying I'm aware that we're talking about 15, 16 financial years. But for interest sake, I just want to know because I thought about this thing that you're doing and you're committed to, and we are proud of the work that you're doing. How far are we, for interest sake, in terms of the implementation of that resolution at Lubumbu, that Mpumalanga, Mozambique border, so that when I go home, I can also report on that. But Chairperson, I welcome the report. Irrespective of what is happening outside, I think FARC is one of the institutions that we can say we are proud of. But I will come for second half when you give us the opportunity to talk about those things that are really dating everything that we're doing good. Thank you.
Good. Number three.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, and your team. Commissioner is having another meeting. I thank Commissioner for the report and your team, and I can only echo what my colleague has just said that. It is always a breath of fresh air when you interact with SARS. I think the results speak for themselves. The unqualified and clean audit is another very important thing for us. And I guess you don't have a choice. You must get a clean and qualified audit. Otherwise, if SARS were not to get there, then it will. God help us all, just a big problem. I would say from our side, I have no doubt that SARS is in the right path to ensuring that South Africa has got resources to meet the broad socioeconomic objectives of our country. Otherwise, you can sit in all these other committees. If you don't have money, what will happen is what the DG was saying, you put in that plastic and nothing will come out of it. So you are so pivotal in us achieving the social economic objectives of our country. I would like just to raise three things for my education and clarification. One, it's well and good to see these results, right? One thing which gives me sleepless night is their sustainability. How sustainable are they? There's a problem about overachieving because you are not allowed to go below that. So I think that's one. Obviously, you tell us how to ensure that these results are sustainable. The custom and excise duty. The system, the border management DMA authority, yeah. I don't think I said a very satisfactory answer as to one, is it properly dealt with, and two, how is it going to affect the aspect who are being given. And lastly, I'm sure there are still some text leakages somewhere. and that's because they are there, and you may not know how big they are. But what do you think the size of those text leakages are, and what steps is that taking to try and make sure that we are closing? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. First, let me start by congratulating SAMHS for receiving the Contact Center Management Group Award. That's quite an achievement. Congratulations. And then just to the point, Chair, I'll look at tax collected. Commissioner, you know, there will be always a way of juxtaposing connection from PIC to CIC. While VAT remains constant, you know, the one aspect that we will not want to change at all times. But I, having looked that in terms of CIT, you know, 3.6% and juxtaposing it to the 10% increase that you obtained at PIT, I do suppose we want to give a relief for the personal income taxpayers at this conjunction to allow a different approach so that they shouldn't say, well, you're busy belaboring the point of collecting 1% as heavy as it might sound to them, but also to allow the company tax to also, in a way, complement the role of the 10% that the PIT has played. I'm not predetermining this, it's your purview to look at it, but the issue that comes, it's an earlier discussion you missed that we had earlier on when we were discussing the issue of student fees. It's an issue that I know National Treasury is going to leave at your doorstep. Because they don't have the revenue. You can take policy
the day,
positions,
yeah.
Then it's gonna. So the question is the state of preparedness as and when the revenue will have to be collected beyond the achievements that we've made. And you don't make a lot of noise when you've achieved. You know, David Miller does not even say, oh, wow, you've done well. He always looks for other issues that are not really pertinent to the work of the revenue. For once, I want to hear you, David, saying, wow, you did well, guys. You know, cheers, something like that, you know. It doesn't come often. So we have this glaring challenge is coming, and Comrade feels so passionately speaks about inclusive growth. It also itself, departments will come with a begging dish to National Treasury, say, can you give us more funding? And then National Treasury says, okay, can we collect more so that we can raise it again? So I envy you and your team, because you're the ones who must break the news to the taxpayers that now we're going to charge you more. That's why maybe I don't want to be part of the collective. So I'm saying the NGO has made certain recommendations. The NGO we belong to say, can you also look at taxing those who have more to give to those who don't have? It's a debatable matter in the public discourse, but maybe that time has arrived. The second matter, Honorable Chair, is the decrease of the right of a right of overstay. Now, my interest will be on the dispute. I hope it has not impacted to start to a point that there's been a lot of litigation that will also eat out. Because, and those are not necessarily your PIT disputes. It's more about your CIT dispute and customs at some point. I don't know to which extent, but I'll be interested in the percentage terms to give us elaborate information deal with that. And if it's along those lines, not to allow write-offs, but to consider write-offs on plaintiffs, because some of them are legitimate challenges that individuals are faced with, some having lost job opportunities and so on. So it will have a different impact altogether. Two, it's also how we tax municipalities who might owe you and helping them as part of their deal, because on the other hand, it's you guys, and it does have also retaining some of the funds, and it has a particular impact that it has had on this municipality. Last question, I know you penalize me forever for the remarks I made earlier on. I'm interested to know on the tax registers on compliance. Remember, I always made this remark that we take it for granted that everybody understands it. And if you look at what we're trying to do in terms of opening up people to come forward who has taken the money offshore and has not paid tax in South Africa, one of the things that we will be interested in is to, because at the side of policymakers at National Service, they want to come with very hard mechanisms. But on the other side, we want you to encourage them to bring back that money home and to open up their books so that we can scrutinize, especially when those who have put this money in trust and all other very complicated schemes. So the relief there can also generate some form of income. So I'll be interested in such an approach that we want to take towards the very last one. Yes, this is the real last one now. The inclusive fiscal citizenship. Can we be shown statistics about young people? They are encouraged to pay taxes. Those who enter the market who might not think it is relevant for them, because some want us to tax pension funds to create revenue for education, but I believe we can get the role of medical. I don't know. I'm just throwing it. I'm throwing ideas. Because we're going to need you to give us more advice on which category and age cohort can make a meaningful contribution without putting too much pressure on company taxes in relation to what you're trying to do. And your views, it might not be today on the sugar tax, because I think it's vital. I'm not on that one, but I believe it's a little bit biting, because there's a perception that it would address lifestyle diseases, but I know that the owner that eats of porridge is the one in the rural areas who need sugar more than the ones who need chocolate. The amount of people who eat chocolate on a daily basis are very few, so the sugar tax will bite more on the poorer end of the middle income earners that you are targeting. It's a debatable matter, but even if you don't speak to it now, but I want you to consider it and give us good advice in the meantime, because this matter will come before. On other matters, Chair, that are in the public discourse, I'll come later.
Yeah,
I know.
Thank you very much. Okay. Who's next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 98% of the report is filed as tax bills filed electronically. I'd be interested to see what percentage is filed by tax practitioners, but I would hesitate to guess that the majority is probably filed by tax practitioners. And there was a MoneyWeb article today which goes back to the question I raised at a previous meeting about the refund time, etc. So there's clearly a perception issue, if not a reality issue. I think in your previous meeting you mentioned that there was, I think, majority was paid within 31 days or 33 days, and so you say within 48 hours, 55% of VAT returns are refunded. But if you look at that article, and based on what I said to you previously, there's definitely a perception that that is not the case. And perhaps you could just comment on that. And then it could also be be related to the e-filing and the interface. And is there any ways to make the interface better? Because you look at the article, you'll see they say that the practitioners don't see it perhaps or whatever the case may be. And maybe if you've got the majority of tax returns are filed by practitioners, they've got multiple taxpayers. And there's no cover page that says you have 54 unopened assessments or your correspondence that hasn't been opened and stuff like that. Maybe if that can be clarified, it might help with the perception or getting the documentation for the refund sooner. But there is definitely, I think, a case of documentation requested and delivered more than once. And that's delayed the process. As I mentioned before, I had a batch return in 2 years that can pay out at the end of this month for the last assessment. And it's a very simple matter, and the documentation was requested on numerous occasions. So perhaps in view of what you said in your report, what the article is saying is, you know, how are we going to get rid of the perception issue that SARS does not pay as speedily as it claims to pay?
Look, on that matter, we've raised this before, I think, raised the specific matter by 2 years outside this meeting, because there's no reason why any MP shouldn't do that. It's your right, and you will raise that matter. So you can see yourself, you know, your staff giving you the report, and are they delivering, and what went wrong in that particular case might guide you on making that tougher on your staff in respect to this issue. Next, Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Tom. There's no question that the e-filing system has revolutionized our revenue collection, and it really has been a leader. And so that goes without saying. So I think it's more the exception that become the issue, and that
it was grudging confidence.
It wasn't a grudging. No, it was easy. Completely honestly.
Might be the trouble, but fine.
I'm always in trouble.
I've been
either
here for
with
what?
You or with someone else, but I'm always
in trouble.
Yeah.
1.5 hours I haven't been sitting.
There you are. You've been very good. So that system is really top class. I am a little concerned, though, that we might be falling behind, because it really was fantastic. And then the issues that we need to deal with that. For instance, some years ago, I think the project started to link the different systems together. So the PAOI would be, you know, I mean, there was a time, I haven't used the call center for a while because I hate it with a passion. I disagree completely with the assessment there. I think it's useless. When it's an unusual case, if it's a normal run-of-the-mill stuff, it's fine. But the point I'm making is you've got PAOI query, and you've got a VAT query, you deal with the one, then you have transfer to someone else to deal with the other, and they can't look on their screens and tell you the whole system. And why I'm raising that is because you say on page 48, and this really is an issue for me, is that they continue to be taxpayer accounts where there's both a debit and a credit, even on the same type of tax. But because they're in different areas, there doesn't seem to be a mechanism except, I think, by doing manual journals. So my question really is, fantastic system. Are we now progressing and making it, taking it to deal with these issues, which are not new, they've been around for a while. And you looked at me when you talked about the VAT refunds, and you know that's my favorite. And so I look at page 49, and I just do some year-on-year comparison. The unaudited tax credit as at the end of the year, income tax credit went up by 52%. VAT credit, 38%. In other words, the amount owed by SARS to taxpayers went up by that much, which is not a good sign as far as if anything, it should be coming down. So let's not go into too much into this whole thing of refund, because Brandon feels to this, you know, I feel strongly about it. And there you go. Now, in terms of the overdue taxpayer debt, you did touch on it. It's gone up from 89 billion to 96 billion year on year. We don't seem to be winning on this one, and I know previously about appointing debt collection agencies. That's on page 848. Are we winning? Are you confident we're going to get this thing down? I don't know. There's no age analysis on this, so you can't really tell how old it is. It might just be 30 days of the current, but I don't think it is. And we somehow need to know what success rates we're having, not just we doing this, doing that. What is the success rate? And then I didn't understand this line, Hanson. And I'll just read it to you. SARS has implemented debt counters as a pilot, brackets, in offices where debt management and branch offices are not co-located. What does that mean? Just explain for me, because I didn't really understand. You do have mobile offices, but you're lucky you're not married to my wife. In this, I'm very lucky. I'll be in trouble. But she, 3 days it took her. I just recovered. Finally, she had to go at 5 o'clock in the morning to be able to get service at your mobile unit in there. It's not good enough. I know I'm speaking for my wife, but there were queues of people. The only way to get there was to get there when it was still dark and then wait, but otherwise, chum comes, band closes up, and off they go. And so that level of service, if that's an example, I don't know if it's typical. I haven't been there myself. I haven't gone round to all the mobile units and done an assessment, but it certainly was a bad experience. I'm painting around a bit here, but on page 111 is the trade and other payables. They've gone up quite significantly, nearly 20% year on year. What exactly, if you look at note 12, which is the relevant note, there was one category there I wasn't sure of. Why is this there? You see, the accruals for salary, that's given. What is the 483 million of trade accounts? What exactly is that? I mean, is that the tea and sugar for the offices? I understand the salary-related expenses that the tea and other stuff, but what is the 483? Thanks.
Right, we don't know. Am I right? 2 minutes. Sorry, thank you. I'll not go over 5 minutes of mine, so I'm owed 2.5 minutes by Pule and 7.5 minutes by the Kirby. Okay.
insights as to how to see this issue. I cannot say offhand in order to mislead this organization. Yes, a report was made by the audit, by the South African advisory board before it had to close up as to how they saw things happen. Secondly, they endorsed the position that I had taken when I took office on suspending the unit that was called the office, which I did on the 12th of October 2014, when the issues came to the fore in the newspapers at the time. And this was said in the public in the presence of EXCO. And the person who was charged with the responsibility of debriefing and bringing the unit that was then involved in it was Mr. Jim Rabele, that he must make the point that these people have brought them into the organization. I can confirm here that that process had to be followed, and they have no other alternative beyond that particular point. With respect to the Interfront issue, I am in a position to report to yourself that I have a team here, but I want to report the following, that the purpose of establishing Interfront, which precedes my appointment, it has been there for a number of years. The objective in my understanding was for it to be able to deal with programs that relate to customs programs. But I would like to pass with your permission, Chairperson, that Mr. Kosilo is in a position to respond to this. I'm not aware of any investigation against Interpol, but I think Mr. Kosilo, as a chief executive, chief officer, not my colleague, the chief officer, legal, would be in a position to give you a better response. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, Chair, Interfront was formed in the late sort of 2000s to build a customs system for SARS. We looked at the various options at the time because, you know, the customs electronic system that we were using was a very old system. It was the CAPE system. It was built in, I think, the early 60s. So the system was becoming, you know, very old and very unstable. So we had to design a new custom system. And we looked at different options. The one option was to get an outside vendor to develop a new system for us, or to buy an off-the-shelf system, or to build a system ourselves. Ultimately, the decision was to build a system ourselves, and we acquired the software from a company. I think the company was called Tatus at the time, which had a core development around custom systems. It was more just for an airport that they actually, until today, are supporting the airport. It's in Luxembourg, in airport, that they are still maintaining that system. So the company did the development in phases. They did develop the first base solution for us, and it was rolled out in 2014. They are currently, because you will also remember, we've rewritten the Customs Act, and we have now passed the new customs laws. So the 2014 platform must now be updated to ultimately sustain the new Customs Act. So what they're currently busy is to upgrade the system and to develop a system that will now be able to support the new customs laws. And there's three big modules that they are working on at the moment. It's registration and licensing to register all customs agents. That's the one big module that they're working on. The second big module that they're working on is the reporting of all customs information, whether it's on passengers or goods, so it's a whole reporting structure. And then the third big module, which is the most complex one, is the whole declaration system of submission of customs documentation to declare goods and to monitor the movement and the control over the either re-exported or it is used for home consumption at the end. So that was the main purpose why the company formed. There was a secondary purpose to it as well, that if the solution is relatively successful, that we can first of all make that solution also available to our neighboring countries, so that we ultimately have a sort of common system in SADC, or maybe in SAFU and in SADC, which will also make trade much more easier if we have common platforms that we can work on. And then also the possibility, even if the system could be marketed elsewhere in the world, and that could have helped reduce some of the costs of building a new system.
Thanks, Kosi. Chair, what it meant is therefore that the whole attempt of the interplan was customs modernization strategy to have a single approach for all goods coming into South Africa. With respect to the question of Somalia, the allegations and public perceptions of SARS that is attacks from all quarters, I would like to indicate that we have been able to withstand this one, but what is key from your perspective is that it's sustainable that we could have the success that we're talking about when we are facing this barrage of attacks. I would like to indicate that we have a leadership that is visible, a leadership that visits each and every region, a leadership that communicates with its employees, and a leadership that holds its staff and members accountable. It is very difficult when you deal with media that is not alive to what is happening internally. But certainly it is important that we need to indicate that we have taken a strategic approach that SARS at all material times will communicate what is positive and also invoke a situation where it creates a situation where its employees are energized, because we have one single mandate. So we cannot be negative in the organization. And we do that through a new strategy that we issue. And indeed, the accessibility that leadership has, I can confirm here that I have been all the regions. And I am proud that with the team that I lead that is here, that I have met in excess of more than 5,000 of the 14,000 staff members. Listening, and also taking insight as to what they think should happen within the organization. Because a leadership that is not able to listen and be able to take ideas is going to be marginalized and not be able to create an environment where it, despite what is happening, creates that environment where it needs. Now, with respect to the various challenges that we have, I would like also to mention to Honorable Mabe that we have indicated in our presentation that we had a survey. We have what you call manually the connection survey. And connection survey is a factor that we are able to see how our employees see leadership and how leadership portrays itself, and juxtapose that in terms of what we do internally in the organization. And the 74% that we spoke about is an external analysis that is made on the organization of our leadership portrays itself. With regards to the allegation by the public that the SARS might be falling apart, I think it is important that the members of the community sitting here can attest that the successes that we have achieved and continue to strive to do is a sum total of an organization that is alive to the issues that it needs to address. If we were to sit and listen to everything that is written, we might be sidetracked in some of these issues. But where we have seen it necessary for us to rebut, the organization has not, in any form or shape, taken a back stand on this matter. Now, on the issue of bad challenges, perhaps Philos may want to ventilate a point or two, the challenge that we face, because it's a matter that has been raised by members of the committee here. Perhaps as we go on, I'd like to respond.
Thank you, Chairman, honourable members and Commissioner. On the question on VAT fraud that was asked, what measures are being put in place to handle fraud? Over the last few years, we have implemented a very sophisticated engine, and we are accessing plenty secondary and third-party data sources that allows us to see or to verify information that is being supplied when somebody is doing a VAT return, and in the same instance, when someone is doing a personal income tax return. So we have the ability to verify any information that is supplied by an individual who is submitting a return. And that has allowed us to see where exactly the problems are. And in certain cases, probably some of the things that you've seen recently, we have picked up a number of problem areas, and we have dissected it, and we are addressing it piecemeal. So to the Commissioner's point previously, the team is extremely committed to make sure that we contain any leakages out of the fiscus, that we also make sure that we increase the compliance rate. So we have a team of people in our case selection division that deals with this specific topic specifically around third-party data to help us prevent any VAT fraud or to contain the VAT fraud that we that is allowed. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps also to amplify the issue raised by Honourable Mabe is the issue of this allegation. I think we have what you call within the organization detection mechanisms of what might affect our staff and what is it that we need to communicate with our staff. A case in point is when we launched Work for Tax. It was a decision that was taken at EBSCO with a view of creating an environment wherein leadership in its demeanor is able to mix and work and be able to have a sense as to how our employees feel about some of the initiatives that we take. Because it is at times very dangerous for leadership to take decisions in exclusion of possible good ideas that might emanate from staff and employees as to how to manage some of the issues that we're dealing with. And it is important also in terms of this particular phenomenon that we have a system within SARC that we have to declaration of interest. All of us, all the employees of SARC, when the financial year starts, we have what you call declaration of personal interest. So that we are able to know what Mr. Moyana is owning. So it is in the system, so that you cannot be found wanting at the end of it. So we have these mechanisms so that as and when some of these issues are raised in the public domain, we can go back into the system and say, Mr. Mabe didn't declare, it's not a reality, and therefore dispel that. I just want, therefore, to respond to Medical Lady, slide number 3 of Scanners. Was here, I should think should be very much happy about this. But I must say that I have the chief officer for customs who is present, and therefore he has to ventilate his presence and role in this meeting here. Suffice to say that we can confirm that the scanners at White Bridge, we did invite the committee to come and lead the presentation, but due to your busy schedule, you are unable to do so. But despite all that, we've gone ahead to now create the launch of the mobile scanner at the biggest land border post in the continent. With respect to the remaining part, I would like to allow the member, the chair, if the chair allows Mr. Mikaletos, the chief, to talk about the remaining ports of entry as to what measures are we putting in place in order to deter and snuff the energy and oxygen out of those who think they can also get every part of the entry. Jeremy.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chair and honourable members, on the scanners, currently, as you will recall, we have two cargo scanners. One is in Durban Harbour, and the other one is in the Cape Town Harbour, which I understand the committee had a tour towards the end of last year.
what we did is we took the mobile scanner that was the initial scanner that was procured, and we moved that to Whitebridge earlier this year, and that was commissioned in Whitebridge around about January, February this year. And as Commissioner has alluded, we have been trying to coordinate with your busy schedule to take you up to show you that scan in action. I understood from the last meeting that we were going to aim at early November once the parliamentary session started to quieten down. So we'll look to liaise with the chair and to get a date confirmed with yourself. On Whitebridge in particular, we up to about on average 60 to 80 scans per day. We recently had quite a nice bust. In fact, it was in the media, I think, two or three weeks back on uncut diamonds and gold that was actually been smuggled off roughly 2 million rand. We also at the last meeting committed to give feedback around some of the smaller or some of the other land borders, and Lubombo in particular was one of the ones that was mentioned. With Lubombo, we currently have baggage scanners at a number of the large airports and land borders. So Royal Tambo, for example, in Cape Town International Airport, Whitebridge, we have baggage scanners. During the course of this year, we're in the process of procuring and implementing an additional 8 baggage scanners. One of them is due for Lubombo, and we're busy with the infrastructure at the moment, and we're aiming to go live towards the latter part of November or early December this year. The remaining 7 baggage scanners, they plan for, one is for additional tier to OTIA arrival, Oliver Tambo International Airport, as well as at the cargo section, Lanseria, Golela, Mahamba, Robles Bridge, and Skilfuthenek. So that's where the additional baggage scanners will be commissioned during the course of this fiscal year. And we also have planned, we're busy procuring 2 additional cargo scanners, one for Ortea for the air cargo, and the second one is a mobile scanner for City Deep, for the inland terminal.
Perhaps in addition, Chair, we also want to have a scanner for the Lubombo waterfront, because it's one of the biggest traffic that we have just to add. With respect to the questions and points raised by Honourable Sufiso, we would like to thank you very much for the accolades that you said about us. It is the work that we do that makes us proud to be able to make the committee work, but certainly we take cue to some of the issues that you raised with us. The issue that you raised was the issue of sustainability of these successes. And indeed, it is an issue that we as leadership have taken very seriously. I am in a position to provide you with a report that says, for us to maintain this high level of sustainability, we have what we call General GE Forum, Group Executive Forum. That takes place every 2 weeks. And we have what you call the regional vehicles across the entire South Africa. Now, why do we have this GE Forum? The GE Forum sits with a clear agenda of identifying and be able to dissect what the target is for the financial year under review, what is it that we need to do additionally in order to meet the target, what are the challenges that we are facing perhaps not to meet the target, what is it that we need to achieve in respect to adding additional resources to the key objective of collecting all revenue. I must indicate that the establishment of the GE Forum and the regional steer course has been able to energize and be able to give us an idea of the huge resource pool of people that who are experts who may not have been given an opportunity, who in their own areas have not been given an opportunity to become analysts. I can confirm here that we have now been able to have a sense, Chairperson, that we have analysts across the organization, both for economic analysis, in terms of data analytics, people who can do statistical analysis. And this in itself is precisely because we have thought it fit that it is important to expand the footprint of leadership and instill and what you call open up the organization for initiatives to take root within the organization. That's one part of the forum. Sustainability also with respect to this the achievement that we have made is precisely because we have leadership, as I've indicated, that is visible, leadership that interacts with all our stakeholders. We do have meetings with the CEOs of the banks. We do have meetings with the recognized controlling bodies like the tax practitioners to understand their concerns and be able to address those for us to be able to understand what are the blind spots that we face within the organization. Now, with respect to customs and excise, I'll leave that again to my colleague, Jet. But I want to speak about the leakages that you spoke about. It is possible that a target may have been set and we may have the opportunity to surpass it. But we are busy as an organization within the business and individual tax environment led by the acting chief officer, looking on the issues of the tax gap. Because it would be amiss of this organization not to be able to look as to what is it that we are not addressing. The issues of transfer pricing, base erosion and price profit shifting, how large is the high net worth individuals in South Africa, and other initiatives are some of the issues that we have thought they should form part and parcel of the agenda for us to be able to reduce the tax gap. If the tax gap is reduced, it is able to feed into the national treasury strategy of reducing the deficit. And it is important, therefore, as a tax authority, that we should not just be looking into our own small area in terms of collecting the tax, but look at other opportunities that are available. Mr. Kosilo will speak about some of the initiatives that we speak about, the voluntary disclosure. You recall in the previous year we had the leakages from HSBC. The question that arises, what do you do with this? It is a factor of having analysts and people who are able to do number crunching and analysis. And therefore, as a complete package, we are saying that yes, there are leakages, and we cannot be saying that we are perfect every time as we meet as a team, the new initiatives that we discover, and therefore need also to up the ante in order to close those leakages within the organization. I would like, therefore, so that we don't leave some of the questions unanswered, I would like, therefore, to perhaps request Jed to speak, or Kosi, on the BMA matter. But, Chairperson, we did speak about this matter in the last meeting.
Yeah, can I advise that I was going to say the same? I've reasonable comment. It's really a parliamentary matter, but there's not more for you to say. On the parliament side, I'm worried about this. We're going to discuss it later. We have allocated one DA person and Makoti member to go to the Home Affairs thing, but it's impossible given our program. So I agree with you. Can we move on to the next question, please? And can I suggest 10 more minutes at most?
We'll certainly.
Okay.
With respect to tax collected, tax collection is a factor of a decision taken by the minister in his medium-term budget as to what is it that the country should collect. Vis-a-vis the economic conditions internationally and domestically. And then we as the authority or the entity that is charged with this responsibility, it is our duty to go and collect as much as we can. But we collect that in taking into account there are some external factors that are beyond our control that might not allow us to collect that which has been set as a target. Fidos will speak about CIT versus PIT relief, and we know that factors. But on the issue of student fees, quickly, it's also part of the tax gap. Inclusive economic growth, I would like to refer the members to page 4 of our slide, where we have indicated very quickly, where we say components forming our business model that enables wealth creation in South Africa contribute to the national development plan. So we are part and parcel. We're not sitting indeed it fits to the discussion that you had with the DG of National Treasury, that if we need to look at a bouquet of factors in order for us to amplify the tax base. With respect to the write-offs of debts, of course you will speak to it. How do we tax the municipalities? I would like Kosi to deal with that. Tax compliance also is an issue of voluntary disclosures, inclusive citizenship. Inclusive citizenship, as you indicated, medical schemes, sugar tax that you spoke about. But it is also important to highlight to you, Chair, members of the committee, that I would like sooner than later to have an endeavor within the taxi industry and the funeral directors, because that's where we see the issue of citizenship and patriotism emanating. It would be wrong for us to take and paint the taxi industry as non-compliant, because they have had discourse with the South African Revenue Services on this issue. But it is important for us to take a proactive approach. I have met the president of Santaco, and he has indicated his willingness to bring his membership to the party so that we can have a meaningful discussion. But I must also indicate that last week I had attended a meeting of the African Tax Administration Forum, comprising of about 30 to 40 commissioners general of the continent. And I must indicate I learned a lesson that it is possible to harness of the taxi industry, which is multi-billion, because in most countries you see the taxi industry going around. You go to Ghana, you go to Tanzania, those people pay tax. Why can't we, as South Africa, look at lessons learned from our peers and look at the possibility in a very constructive, non-intrusive, giving them an opportunity for them to be able to become compliant, patriotic citizens in paying their taxes? We've seen it in Mozambique. People pay their taxes, the mamas who are sitting in the streets, they run to the mobile tax units. They run to the tax mobile unit that passes to go and pay voluntarily. And then we have the hawkers here. We have what is called Achip, which was here for the hawkers. We need to bring everybody into the tax. Achip, I'm not sure. But that's what... So that's exactly what you want to do. But there is a common thread across the whole spectrum of these countries, Mr. Mania. They are saying people in their countries cannot raise their voice of saying service delivery. Service delivery must be based on your ability to show that you are also paying your fair share of taxes. So that you, if you say there's no clinic, you can raise your hand and say that I've paid my taxes. So that there is a lot of political lessons as well as economic and fiscal issues we can learn. But I believe that South Africans, by their nature, they would like to be compliant. Well, quickly. Well, I know, but I don't want to get to that. I would like, of course, less quickly to get into debt write-offs, as well as how do we make municipalities to collect taxes. I think that's part of the last few questions.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, just quickly on the VDC, the Voluntary Disclosure Program. We have a permanent program currently that allows people to come forward and to regularize their tax affairs. The program has been in place since 2010. We've collected about 11 billion there over the last, 5 and a half years. For the current report, the amount that we collected is just over 2 billion. Most of it comes from income tax. And secondly, that, and lastly, pay as you earn. Those are the three main tax types that people sort of regularize. Then, as you know, Chair, there is the new scheme that's before your committee currently that you are processing. On write-offs, I think the question was sort of around the debt book and some of the debt that's under dispute. The debt that's under dispute is around about 12 to 13 billion rand. But a taxpayer, when you object and appeal, and the law says it does not suspend the payment, but the law does provide that a taxpayer can come forward and request for a suspension of the payment. And the law provides a certain criteria which the commission must then consider in whether he is going to give the suspension. And you will look at factors like, if it was fraud that was committed, then we will not suspend the payment of the tax. Or if there's a risk that assets will be dissipated. But there could be factors, for example, that if insistence on the payment immediately can cause irreparable sort of hardship on the company or the entity, then we may allow suspension. Also, we look at whether you can provide security. So there's a whole list of factors that we look at before we give you suspension of the debt. On the issues of other types of taxes, perhaps to broaden the range, I think those are policy issues, Chair. But just by way of example, pension funds, we had a go at them, some years back, where we did tax them. Eventually, the decision was that we should not do it. It's not the right thing to do because, it is an instrument for people to save for their old age and to become independent. And that's an incentive that governments give, that when you put the money into the scheme, you get a tax deduction. We allow a tax to be built up in the scheme, but when it paid out, when you retire, then we tax you. So it's actually not a permanent tax break that you get, it's more a deferral that you get. We tax you when the money is eventually paid out on retirement, whether it's a lump sum or whether it's a pension fund.
Can I clarify something? You're giving us your individual opinion, but you started with this qualification that that's a policy matter.
Yes.
Okay? As long as it's understood.
Okay.
Because if government decides, then obviously you will implement.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Somebody will be impressed with my intervention.
I
never mentioned your name. Excuse me, Frank Jenkins. Did I ever mention a name?
No.
Fine, fine. She's not the only woman here, right, Frank?
Yeah.
Did you let me? She's insulting you? You're saying you look as ugly as I do? But
no.
You can sort it out later.
I know I do.
You know you joke, right?
Yeah.
Can we go on?
On the issue of municipalities, municipalities are not paying tax themselves. They are exempt entities. But they do pay taxes like pay as you earn, in respect of their employees, etc. In certain instances, they pay that. They have lots of breaks around, either zero ratings or exemptions, etc. But they do pay that under certain circumstances as well. I think the other things under the sugar tax and so on, we can come back to you on that.
Yeah, on the sugar tax, can I just remind us, we've agreed that we will have a sitting on that matter. We would like you to be, again, that's a policy issue, maybe, isn't it? So I think they're not going to be able to answer. But I would also like to point out that actually, the person who raised this issue, whose name I shall not mention, has had a whole plate of biscuits before.
I didn't.
No one mentioned that name.
I did not.
And then she argues that she's interested in working class as a whole.
For more than a month.
Which is why people say in civil society, you politicians reflect yourself
for more than a month
as the interest of the poor.
I have not said a single.
I also want to point out that I have not touched these biscuits.
I did not eat biscuits for more than a month.
Fine. And as a poor fellow, working class fellow, the credibility of that person.
Now David's going to ask a question in the house.
You forget that you can't answer. Can a certain member prove to us that she did not? You'll go and investigate. You don't have any better to do. You'll go and investigate and check whether you've been eating biscuits. Right, please, can we move on?
Quickly, two questions that remain and they'll be short. One is on outsourcing of debt collection. And the other one is going to be answered by Fidos. The other one is the trade and payables will be answered by Mr. Matovani.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think it was reported previously, and it's in the annual report, that we identified all our debts older than 4 years, and we are doing a pilot with three different companies where we've outsourced our debt book to the tune of 6.3 everything else before that, we are still dealing with in-house. Up until now, the agencies have collected 464 million over the last 3 months, at an average of about 116 billion rand per month. They've done a total of 5.1 million engagements, of which 1.1 million of it was telephone engagements, and the rest of it is based on SMSs and emails. We are in daily contact with these agencies because it's obviously our responsibility, and they subscribe to all the methodologies that we apply to EPAR. Thank you.
The question was about the state and other people, considering the member of parliament says that is there for coffee and call, like you said. This is basically the credit, the service providers that provide goods and services to the organization. But at the point of time, it is first much, you find that either two things, one, either they have a certain invoice, or the invoice was received prior to the closing date. And the likes of services that is provided is your security, gas, that gas is really on sound, cleaning of the buildings, rates and taxes, legal costs, and share fees. So those are typical normal day-to-day kind of expenses that you have to pay to the tax commission.
Chairperson, we have concluded the session.
But I'd like to, in view of the time, it's 4:15 p.m. Let me be very brief, unless it's absolutely necessary, because the first part leaves at 5:15, and it's something to wait around 5. So, really, it's absolutely necessary. Remember, the process requires to follow up with questions and so on. Right. Anybody want to just see how many people will ask questions? It's yourself also getting to the drive. That's the next issue. We haven't come to the issue yet. Declaring on the annual report. Okay. Can I just raise then one or two quick things? One is, we agreed that space erosion and profit shifting is a key concern of ours and related committees, right? You will recall the last time we came here, we agreed that, look, you know, one of the issues that arose was on, and it makes me go on to the next issue, interestingly. The FIC, in a way, it came out from Treasury, I think, or whoever. And look, the FIC can do so much, and then it hands the matter over to the security or police agencies or whoever. And then they have no power to follow up on that matter. So we said, why don't we bring the SAPS committee, what is the police committee and whoever else, Jones committee and so on, yet again. Well, Jones committee was there, and so was Trader, and so was Vendor. Now, we had hoped to have a sitting before we arrived. So can you note that? That's still an issue. We'll have to find a date for that. I don't know when. Secondly, have a group available on December 25th to go to the Bracebridge border. Because you see, Commissioner, we actually, as hope Parliament would end, as it normally does, the second week of November. And initially we targeted the first week after that we would go. Now I notice Parliament rising on the 30th of November, when we have constituency period. But we cannot continue, we have to go. So, we, people want to go on the first week of December, even if it's a small team, Commissioner, we're looking to come in. So can we target that, and can you send a note up, find out who's coming, and so on. At least there should be four people or girls, right? And it must be multi-party ideally, two parties at least. So can you explore things? Right, fine. So basically, we're alerting you to this. We may not be able to summon the whole committee to go, in the sense of not legal problems. I don't know why that word is coming on again. What I mean to say is, we will not be able to take necessarily the entire committee, but at least four people, once we know which day of the week they're available, Commissioner. So tentatively targeting the first week, right? Then, to also say that we will follow the same process, right? To bring this whole thing to a conclusion. What I think we also need to do, apart from posing questions, further questions to Antonio's side, and you replying, same thing that we said to Treasury earlier, Commissioner, what we will do is ask members to put further questions by Monday noon, preferably before that. Two is, can you start making recommendations? In other words, we haven't said enough about recommendations. Okay? And really, it's not Antonio's job to do that, nor mine, actually. Often I've tried to squeeze out of what many things we've said, what we are actually recommending. And it's not fair on Antonio and me. So what we're going to do is urge members to submit up to a page of recommendations. we will insert it in some form or another in the report, and the chair will finally say, okay, these are the two or three I left out because I don't think it will sell, right, whether it comes from one party or another, but it's a decision of the committee, right? So basically, on the matter of processing the annual reports further, is there any other issue to consider? I take it we have to table it before the budget, MTPPS, right? You've got the date, right? So in short, remember we've got three entities appearing next Tuesday and Wednesday, is that right? Tuesday. Good. So, Antonio's going to be preoccupied with annual report 5. So there we are. Any other ideas on how we do things? Good. Fine. Okay. That's done. Okay. Then on the next issue, Mr. Mania, Dikeledi, Cecito, Chandi, and Pule.
David Pule.
How do you do that? Whatever. All right, fine. No problem.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, I'd like to take you back to the Standing Committee on Finance meeting, which took place on the 23rd of August, 2016. At that meeting, I asked you a question about...
Sorry, Kiki, I'll not just process it. We have got about 40 minutes, right? Right. So if each person can stick to about 5 minutes each, that will take us close to 40 minutes.
Thank you. The Standing Committee meeting on Finance on the 23rd of August 2016, I asked you a question about whether a senior official within SARS was being investigated. I did not name that official, but that official was sitting one person away from you, and his name was Jonas Makwakwa. You responded at that meeting to say that you would not be prepared to discuss ongoing. But what we now learned is that at the time that meeting took place, you would have received the report from the FIC on or about the 17th of May 2016, containing very serious allegations. And it appears that you would have already initiated a process of internal proceedings. So I can't confirm that. You did not, in retrospect, think it was very poor judgment to invite Mr. Jonas Makwakwa to join you as part of the delegation, and why did you invite him to be part of the delegation, given the fact that there were very serious allegations that had been made, and it appears that internal proceedings have already within SARS. So that's the first question. The second question, I'd like to take you to your statement which you issued on this matter on the 16th of September 2016. In that statement, you allege, and I quote, that there was a lack of cooperation from the FIC, from Mr. Murray Michelle sitting down there. I wonder if you could substantiate that allegation. In what respect did the FIC, in your view, fail to cooperate with SARS in this matter? You also, in the statement, pointedly say that the FIC reports directly to the Minister of Finance, which of course is technically correct, but read in this context, is it correct that you imply that part of the reason the FIC fails to cooperate folks are investigating this matter as a result of correspondence, I understand, received from yourself on the 15th of September. The question is, was this matter referred to the SAPS by SARS, or was it not? Okay, so that's the crisp question. Then, finally, so, Commissioner, before I move to the FIC, in a reply to a parliamentary question received this morning, which you may not have seen, the Minister takes issue with your handling of this matter, and he says very pointedly that he is perturbed about the way that you handle this matter. He is very concerned that he alleges that you failed to inform him about this matter because you were attempting, or possibly attempting, to resolve the issue without the matter becoming public. And he says that you failed to take responsibility for dealing with this matter as an accounting officer expected to in such vital matters. What is your response to
you have 5 minutes now?
Just quickly on the FIC.
No, no, can I just raise up this? No one's gonna stand me down with this. Can I speak against the way forward? You have already given the written question on following the exchange I had with you on Monday. Those questions are asked for the committee to send it out to the committee, which I think we did. I also sent it to both, well, all three, I think. I think it was sent to the first Prime Minister, to, what's his name, the Commissioner, and to FIC. So can we have that as a table?
Exchange.
No, no, we'll be fair to you. But can I raise something that's puzzling me before we go on? Cindy, this is the reply of the Minister that you gave us. Around 2 o'clock. Is that right? The 2 pages. Now, I don't see where there's a reference here to the Minister saying that he has problems with the Commission. I'm just asking, what is this a question? I'm looking at 1975.
1-8-5-4.
So there were 2 questions. Oh, I don't even know that there were 2 questions. Oh, my. Right, so how many questions are distributed today?
So your
other issues are tabled, only new questions, fine.
1975. I ask a question, whether the FIC produced, the operative word here is, produced a report on suspicious and unusual patterns. If you look at the reply, the FIC deliberately twists the reply and says that they don't have powers to make public any report. That was not the question with respect, Mr. Michel. You deliberately misrepresented what I asked in the question. And what makes it so... I'm happy with that. Particularly, what was the purpose of passing on the report to SARS? They might well have been justified, but what I'm really interested in, did the FIC refer this report to the SAPs, and when did they?
Yeah, you asked that question. I'm not going to anymore. Just to draw members' attention. Actually, if you look at the reset button, you were 9 minutes. Plus, if you take your five questions, it runs into, if you had tabled the question verbally, around 12 and a half minutes. So, in fairness, anybody who wants to speak up to 12 minutes is free to do so. Starting from bullet down, up to 12 minutes.
I must say, I think I would just say I'm just going to pick up a few questions that are some specific and some on the just on the FIC. I think they relate to the issue that is already out there in the public domain. You know, and mostly to just start with an understanding of whether the commissioner believes that when you appeared last time. The commissioner gets the report of corrupt allegations against the senior SARS official in May. If so, what happened? Some of the things are really the things that I raised in my previous question, which really related to
with abstract targets. The one in the MPP.
Just say if the allegations leveled against a colleague at a senior level, you know, what kind of steps are taken to just make sure that those things are addressed without necessarily, because what we have seen in the past in other institutions is that these things of allegations against senior officials, depending on their age in the organization or how far they've been there, those things could also end up forming internal factions. You know, if there are people who have been working with you for a long time and suddenly they are not sure whether your going will affect their staying and all of that, you know, so how do you go about just making sure that you do, these things do not create organizational instability? And just on the FIC as well, to just understand the level of cooperation with SARS and the extent of such cooperation. And also, I'm not sure if we should be checking on what are the things in the legislation that really prevent them from answering some of the questions that get to be raised, so that we can best be educated there if there are things in legislation that are actually barring them from. Because as public representatives and members of parliament, we also have a network of constituency offices throughout the country. The general public out there can bring up some of the things that we tend to ask here. So what colleagues should understand is, more often when we ask questions, we don't necessarily ask our own personal questions. I'm sure, David, I speak for you as well in the DA. People ask things that are concerning to the public out there, whether it's the DA, whether it's the ANC or any other party. So it's important that, you know, and if questions can be answered to, where it is clarified, maybe the law says there are certain things that you cannot really pick up because of their sensitivities and all of that. That would be my question.
Good.
Next
question, please.
Sure, I'm next. Chairperson, I'm going to refer to the last meeting that Honorable Poole and Honorable David spoke of. I think that was the meeting that we had, or the discussion that we had with the FAS in May, whereby I think the commissioner during the interaction, he indicated that there seemed to be no cooperation between FIC and FAS, or maybe between the two leaders. I know that the honourable members have raised that, but I think I should also raise it, because I wanted to raise it, that if there is no cooperation between the two institutions.
I have a lovely face. I just draw the woman here.
If there's no cooperation between the two,
she wants to see my face.
No, but you can't say that about the face.
She's complimenting me.
It looks like I'm enticing honorable members. I know you are a happy committee, but I think it's very important that we raise this matter, because it affects everybody. If there's no cooperation, we are not saying you should be buddies, you should be friends. But over and above everything that you're doing, we should think that you are representing South Africa. And Tina, as public reps, you know, we represent the interests of people. So I would like the commissioner to clarify that, because it's very important for us to know that there is cooperation between the two. If I misunderstood what you have said in May in that meeting, it needs to be clarified. Chairperson, we are talking about a senior official who is suspended. And taking from the media and the public concern about what is happening at a report, the partner to the senior official is working in SARS also. But there are two different, you know, reports that I would like the commissioner as the head of SARS to clarify me and the country. According to this report, Honorable Chair.
Which one are we talking about?
The one that I have is 1894.
Yeah, you're going to get both sides on it. Yeah, 1894.
Yeah. The minister is saying the partner or the partner to the official, Ms. Wu, LP is not suspended. And this question or this answer came on the 16th, September 2016. But also when I compare with what was reported on Daily Maverick, according to the SARS spokesperson, Sandile Menene, on the 12th of October, he says that they have suspended the partner to the senior official in the room. So there are two contradictions. The minister is saying they are still looking into the possibilities or the legality of suspending a person who is on maternity leave. But the spokesperson is saying this again. So I just need clarity to know what is happening. And if there is a suspension, how long did it take SARS or you, Commissioner, to suspend the said person? Chair, my last question is that there is a perception built out there, Commissioner, that you have acted inconsistently in different manners in which you approach the so-called the road unit, the road investigation unit, and the allegations against the senior official. The senior official that I'm talking about, I think they've already said is Jonathan Masoba. So that perception they also need to be clarified, and I will appreciate it if I can get that opportunity to be clarified as to is this perception really talking to the real issues or are they inconsistencies in as far as the actions that that you have taken? Thank you, Chair.
Whoever is next, thank you.
thank you, Chair. In the same matter, it's of public interest, Commissioner and your colleagues from SARS. You know, there's always a problem when you have got a snow white shirt, because once you have got one black dot, you tend to concentrate on it. So I think that's where we're coming from. This has got a possibility of being a black stain on a very white shirt. That was
problem.
Commissioner, which says that you appointed that firm to try it and sanitize and whitewash the wrongs that have happened in the organization. And there are also all types of conspiracy theories which are taking rounds, including that intended to protect errant and fluent taxpayers. I think I would like to hear your comment on that. Perhaps it would also be very important to know what was the purpose of you appointing that and when we expect the final report if it's not ready. There's also an allegation who says the partner was official was regularly appointed, what is exactly happening. So if you could just clarify for me those things. Thanks, Chair.
Who's next?
I want to live in a world where anything that is bad is not called black. And
yeah, but we're not going to allow you to speak now.
Yes, Chair. I want to live in a world. Chair, let me say, Commissioner, let me say, I'm a little bit demoralized. Because I never, in my wildest dreams, have I ever thought any of these things that I respect so much can face any allegation. I don't wish upon any official from SARS. Because in my mind, SARS has the best men and women who uphold the Constitution of South Africa, who are there to be a watchdog towards all of us when we go astray. And all the things that I'll say today, I'm duty bound to say them in public interest. But before I even ask any question, I need to say that I'm very worried about the leaks that we get in state institutions, especially in SARS. And I'll be interested to know how Commissioner personally will take responsibility of trying to deal with leaks that will put SARS in this repute, so that any matter can be dealt with internally and procedurally, so that we don't address matters of leaks. Because as you speak here, we'll be dealing with a matter that is in public court that went through a leak. Secondly, I will be interested to know the measures that we have in place to deal with an aspect of corruption. In the public discourse, on a daily basis, we are faced with perceptions of state institutions beset by corruption. So upfront, we need to have programs that we are articulating so that the public can know how we will deal with corruption. But there's one question, and it relates to what Honorable Masango has already indicated, and I'm not insinuating that the person who is a partner to Mr. Mavoko, but he said so in City Press that there is a partner. So I take it you are privy to such coiling of individuals as partners. Therefore, I'll use the same terminology in an event that there is such, because then we have the opportunity to clear those public perceptions. That there was an irregular appointment of a certain individual referred to as a partner to Mr. Mavoko. So is this article correct as it stands in the City Press, and how will you respond to it so that we clarify in an event that we start the perception that a particular individual is maybe amongst yourselves, you've been feeding the City Press with information about who has cordial relations to the WHOOP as a staff member. It's now glaring in public discourse, so it becomes a matter of concern to the extent. And Chair, I'm hoping that moving forward, I've seen the attempts that the Commissioner has put in place to try and maintain a credible stature of the institution, and at no point should you believe that we are casting aspersions on the institution, but to be duty bound to deal with matters that are in the public discourse and raise them and try to address them so that in future we don't find ourselves in the same space where we have to deal with them. That's why the Chair tried to make a point that we will not prioritize matters that are first on the table, but first deal with the annual report and our work, and then deal with those issues later, because we need to reflect to those matters. I think.
Yeah, I think what I'll do, Commissioner, is I'll intervene to facilitate a way forward. So I don't want to ask, and I think a lot of questions have been covered. So I'll just leave it at that. I've also got some ideas. I've shared with them meeting with the commissioner, what's the advice? And the FIC director and the DA and the ANC, if we can arrive at some agreement around closing issues. And a lot of issues have occurred that I think are very, very well covered by the members. Can I compliment the members in the first instance on the quality of the questions? And it suggests to me in the first instance there's no major divide in this committee on the need to tackle issues such as this. We may have different agendas, different emphasis, and tone and so on we may defer. I don't think there's a divide here around the matter. Because, Commissioner, I think you are like the equivalent, if you like. I don't know whether what's the right word, Frank, help me here. Like, if I say a judge, then I'm not sure. Yeah, in a way, you're the judge of, in a way, in a metaphorical sense at least, you're like a judge, right? And I think the Reverend Women said, some person uses this politically incorrect, if I may say that, if you don't you respect black, white, and so on. But I really think it is good that the committee is taking responsibility to play its oversight role. So that's great. Now, Commissioner, we understand the complexities and difficulties of the issues around which you have to respond, and so we'll give you appropriate time. Don't feel under pressure. We will arrange for, there's a later bus and so on. I would like to plead to members, this is an exceptional situation. It's 5:07. We don't want to have another meeting now to discuss this thing and so on. Can we try to finish today? And I'm urging that if we have to, let's do it for 5:30 and slightly longer if we have to. Let's give you time. Because if we add all the questions together, you've covered the spoken and colleague here for at least half an hour. So I think in fairness to the two gentlemen from outside, so to speak, our entities, they must be given higher time. Thank you. Yeah. So let's not rush away. This is a unique circumstance. It won't happen again this week. But hopefully, Commissioner, you will your chief will to respond. Then we'll hand over to the FIC.
Thanks, Chair. I would like to respond to be on the record. Member of the committee, Mr. Menyane, you met on the 23rd of August. Referred to the minutes of that meeting, which I have in my possession. I read and I quote. Mr. Menyane asked if there was an investigation conducted by the Financial Intelligence Center into any senior member of SARS executive team. Was that investigation brought to the attention of SARS and subsequently referred to SARS? He further asked if the SARS had any knowledge of any investigation conducted into anyone of its executive team. Close quote. Chair, I would like to respond by the following. I was shocked because this matter is between SARS and the FIC. And I would like to respect the confidentiality of information that is shared between the two institutions. And when the name FIC was mentioned, I got shocked as to how a member of the committee had access to a document entitled FIC. And I'm not here to cast aspersion to my colleague, and you could see from the consternation that I had in my face. But allow me, Chairperson, because this is about the credibility of the institution to which I am accountable to, I'd like to refer you to George Powell. Animal farm. There is no animal farm syndrome in SARS. And I want to indicate the seven commandments of animalism says all animals are equal. Close quote. And I'm saying this precisely because a member of the committee indicated that there is a stain on a white shirt, which when you look at it holistically, it has an impact of looking at things in a manner that must cast aspersion to the public. But I want to go back to George Orwell. Again, it says the seven commandments were changed. So for me, there was no change at all. Because if we depart from the principle that all animals are equal, then it casts very aspersion that all animals
ask all of you sitting here. I was in China on the week of the 14th until the 17th. Mr. Marais can affirm, he might not have been aware that I was out of the country. I received a letter on the 17th. It was received in my office on the 17th of May. Signed for, but not given to me by my PA. On the 17th, thereof, we had what you call the GE forum, which I referred to. And then my PA said, I won't mention the name of the official, he's coming to give you a report which he says he must deliver himself. That report was delivered by the official consent. Little did I know what is contained in that report. Like all reports which are considered confidential, I sit, I don't open immediately because I have other things and I'll open it. Lo and behold, I took that document with me. I think the 18th was on a Wednesday. I went home and opened that envelope. If anybody can use any allegory, I changed color what I saw in that report. I was about to puke. I was shocked to the nerve to read the contents of the allegations, which are serious, about a colleague whom I had joined some few months who had taken this to the organization. And I must indicate this organization that I joined has what is called Collective Agreement of Disciplinary Code and Procedure. Like any other leader, I did not have to be reckless about what I read. I could not sleep. The following day, the day after we had met, I think my colleagues were not aware, who are sitting here, Kosi and them, who had come from that meeting, I had consternation in my heart. And Jonas Makwako was part of what you might call corridor chat. I can't recall whether it was Teboho or Sengani who said, you must go home. Jonas, you're not well. Because I also came back from China not well. He was not well. I want this to be on record. And that gave me a relief because I did not want to see this man in front of me. But I did not want to create an opinion which is negative of being found guilty on something that I don't know. He had to respond to it. On the 19th, I called the head of HR. That document was not even shared with my PA. It was in my bag. And it has never been in any files in the office to date. Why? Because I wanted to avoid leakages. It was given to me, and I shared this with the head of HR. And I said, I am at loss as to what I'm reading here. Perhaps you have a fresh pair of eyes that could inform me. Because I had to tell the head of HR. It has both criminal and internal disciplinary processes. And therefore, there was no reason for me to keep this document to myself. The sequence of events is as follows. On the 20th, which was the Friday, I wrote to my colleague, Mr.
May,
May, yes. On the 20th of May, I wrote to my colleague, Mr. Marie Michel, acknowledging his letter. I indicated in the letter I acknowledge the receipt of his letter, and therefore I have looked into the matter with the severity and the seriousness that it contains, and that I would like to have a discussion with him. My office made all attempts
met on the 15th of June in his office. I drove to his office. In that meeting, I indicated, I called that I am here personally as the accounting office and accounting authority. I view the letter that you've given me with the seriousness that it deserves, especially as it refers to the issues of corruption, money laundering, and all sorts of things that are contained there. And this man is a member of my senior executive committee. He's here to confirm it. And I indicated I would like to be able to be assisted as to how to go about it. We had a discussion amongst ourselves. I indicated that I had already, on the 20th, that Friday, dispatched a letter. When I sent a letter to him, the same Friday on the 20th, because of the importance and the sensitivity, I sent Mr. Makwakwa and his partner a letter to say I'm in possession of a letter that has serious allegations against both of them. Members of the committee, there was no way that I could not inform them, otherwise this was going to be a kangaroo. I informed them, and I indicated to Makwakwa in my letter, which I'll read.
You have a letter there before you. There's a date on it, there's a thing. Unless somebody can prove otherwise, let me just frankly help me here. You see, we shouldn't convert ourselves into a commissioner being quiet. We take your word that you did send that letter. I mean, are you going to... Well, look, there's lots of smoke and mirrors in the current situation. I mean, even my mother, who doesn't speak English, right, and has got a standard 2 education, can see that, right? So nobody doesn't know that. But I'm a bit worried, Frank, can you help me, about converting us into a commission of inquiry? So I'm not saying you shouldn't say what you're saying there. You should say it if you feel you need to, and you feel people may not believe you, and that's your discretion. The difficulty I also have is, you're going to have Mr. Murray Mitchell now say, the law says I can't respond, the law says I can't respond. If there's a discrepancy between what you're saying and what Mr. Murray is saying. So before you respond, I'm asking for guidance. I've never come across a situation like this before, Jenkins. So am I right to say that it's reasonable that we cover detail, but we don't go into like becoming a commission of inquiry? Having said that, Frank, can you just guide us? I'm not worried being like commission inquiry.
May or June.
Because we don't really know what is going to come out and what the effect is and how it is reported.
Right, so what are you suggesting?
What I'm suggesting is this committee is busy with hearing your questions.
Frank, we're guided by you. Please say whatever you want to say. But also, we should just be careful. And just look, the name is in the public domain. What is worrying me a bit? Then that's the point I want to raise. That person that's being accused and his partner also have rights. And what's worrying me a bit is I don't know whether it's appropriate. Can we get some, you're not a lawyer. I'm asking for legal advice. I'm chairing now. There's no mandate issue yet. I'm asking you, as a lawyer, we have to be sensitive to a person who's not here. Now you can speak, but I'm dealing with the legal matter first. Let's get some guidance. That person also has rights, and so does his partner. That's all I'm alerting you to, right? And he's not here to speak to me. There's media covering this issue. He may have his day in court, or he may not have it. That's the point I'm making. It's the protection of somebody who's not here, which is my job as a committee chair. So firstly, I'm asking you, nobody else. I'm chairing now. You're the lawyer. Have you got any guidelines for us? Or can we just alert the commissioner to that issue and leave it at that? That there is a person and his family and his partner and so on. You're not a lawyer, are you?
No,
you're not.
Right. Then and then you.
Chairperson, I agree with you. We must respect those who have not been found guilty in this matter. They're not here to defend themselves. My understanding is that we're trying to get to the bottom of cooperation or lack of cooperation between the Financial Intelligence Center and SARS, and whether that report should have gone first to the SAPs or the Hawks or whatever. I think that's the matter here, rather than getting into the details of the investigation, which is still ongoing. and I believe it's two investigations, one from SARS and one from SAPS. So we need to respect that and actually apply a little bit of self-control.
Not
only to the merits and even operational issues of those investigations, to prevent us from jeopardizing what might happen here. We enjoy parliamentary privilege here, but outside, not everybody has it.
Yeah. So basically, that's what trying to pull it. It's about protecting the right of a person to reply. Now, having said that, and having got legal advice, is there any other lawyer you want to come in? No. Right. Over to you, Pule, and then we'll hold on to you and Mr. Manius. That's all. That's the issue. Now you can come in. And you can vote by a majority to say no, and then I'll adjourn and get legal advice. Yes.
No, that's fine. I don't think we are very far from what the legal opinion and what we have already confessed to say, that the matters like this where they are sub judice. And I'm sure I thought that, of course, even in their own, what is that, the code of conduct, there's a document you showed us here, is it a code of conduct or something? I thought that what the commissioner was seeking to do was to just outline to the committee their own process.
Fine.
And
but you're not going to do the content of the list, Mr. McQuarrie.
Yes.
That will not
no,
be
no,
as
no,
long
no,
as we're clear. Okay, we're on the
yes,
same page.
Yes,
yes, Mr. Vania, and then you. So we're on the same page.
Yes.
I have to also protect people who are not here.
Yes.
That's my job.
Yes.
Right. Good.
Chair, I agree with you. There are allegations, and those allegations are serious, and those individuals do have rights. And I think the committee should steer clear of the merits of the accusations,
yes.
But we do need as much information as possible about the process.
Yes.
Because
fine.
The accusation
yes.
is made,
yeah.
It's a person to deal with.
Yeah, fine,
yes.
You're coming the same ground. You're
yes.
on the same page there.
We're
all together then, right? Between the lawyers, myself, and the two colleagues here.
You can point to companies. I don't
know.
No,
please. This one internationally. You want to say something, my friend?
Have you been a DG for years? You know the process, Chairperson, I gave you the context. And in accordance with this document, so that we can distill this matter, because there is decency and collegiality and people's lives and integrity at stake. But at the same time, is the accountability of the chief accounting officer as to what he has done. I did indicate that I did not take a reckless approach to this, given the seriousness. Paragraph 3.3 of our CERSA says to ensure that all principles of natural justice are applied before any claim is disciplined. On the principles, it says, discipline must be applied confidentially between the employer and the I have maintained that. And it is also important to note that in the scope of the application of the merits of the matter that we're talking about, the disciplinary code and procedure applies to all employees of the Southern Revenue Services. Should circumstances dictate, the employer may decide to follow a different process of management unit employees, which process will be fair, just, and aligned to the principles of the Act and the Code of Conduct. But most importantly, Chair, is that if during the course of the investigation, it is uncovered that a criminal offence has been committed, the investigating officer must immediately report the matter to the Sovereign Police and the head of the employee relations or the division of the designated. And if the employee is alleged to have committed an offence that is of serious nature, we pass it to the relevant authority. I would like to submit that Mr. Mabuabua was suspended, the due processes of this code were followed, including his partner. They were both suspended. And therefore, there was no way that I, as the accounting officer, having indicated here the consternation and the shock, that I would sit with this matter and hide it and not take the measures that I've taken. And indeed, my colleague from FIC can confirm that I've indicated in my communication with him, which copies I could provide the chair, that I see this matter as it's in writing. Therefore, there is no way for me to push this thing under the
So side. You wrote to him what date? That's what
I wrote to him. These are the dates. I wrote to him. I met him on the 15th.
Of?
wrote a letter again to him on the 21st of June.
You wrote it on the 21st of June.
Yes, so it was within a month we had already corresponded, and he replied to me on the 13th of July, a month later. And within 2 weeks of that letter, I wrote to him on the 21st of July. So what I find that, Chair, we are getting into what you call a space where an investigation is now becoming an investigation through the media. The fact of the matter is that I had done what I, as the accounting officer, seized with such a serious matter, having not even confided to my colleagues in EXCO, because I thought this matter is serious, it had to be dealt with as serious in order to avoid any leakage of information. It was only after I suspended Mr. Makwakwa that I informed my colleagues. So, Chair, I'm not sure as to how far deep, but be as it may, the meeting on the 23rd was for me a shock because processes were already in place to deal with dealing with this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Have you responded to all the issues?
Well, Chair, if I respond to all of them,
it's fine, if that's what you might want to come back later.
Well, the issue that is raised by Medical Lady Elski Maverick says suspend, she has been suspended. Consistency? Yes, that's consistent. I have acted consistently. When I dealt with the rogue unit, I also informed HR and I had legal opinion on this matter. It did not happen overnight. It took some time for me to take that decision. So like any other process, you need to be able to dispense justice in accordance to the manner in which these things are. You can't just overnight receive the letter from Marie Michel, you're suspended tomorrow. And I needed to familiarize myself, follow through the due processes that we have in the organization. That conspiracy theory feeds into the narrative that sucks. There is no leadership. There is an attempt to hide what Mr. Makwakwa is doing. That Makwakwa is my buddy. Makwakwa is a colleague. And therefore, where that is wrong, in the letter that I can share with you, which meet Mr. Maritin, I have indicated that this is a serious matter. And therefore, I cannot tell him a lie and indicate that I'm dealing with this matter while I'm not dealing with it. With respect to KDE as a partner to Mr. Makwakwa, irregular appointment. The two colleagues who are here, who are independent, who can speak about this issue. Because it is socialized in the media that this matter has been in the public domain for 1 year. And indeed, I, as a commissioner, I did not know what was happening down there because as a commissioner, I deal at strategic level. This was an operational matter. What happened in the department, in the branches that my chief officers have, not for me to go and ask who is having a relationship with whom. But secondly, the two colleagues can confirm whether this was an irregular appointment or not. But I think this committee needs to get that response. And what happened between Kelly E. when she was moved from where she was to where she is now. That I think is important so that we can distill this thing. Otherwise, it will remain as a narrative. And it's important, Chair, that you allow that this team respond as to exactly what happened. So even Mr. David Manier should be able to leave this place knowing fully well that I, as the commissioner, I don't get into operational issues at that level. But certainly, this matter has been dealt with appropriately.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable members. Speaking as the head of HR and also my colleague Mr. Gosilo, who is the direct line, who is the line manager rather, of legal where Ms. Kelly Ann Elski is operating, would also add at the end of my response. We have taken note of what was reported in the media. In our view, the matter relates to three key aspects. Firstly, it relates to the process that was followed in the transfer of Ms. Kelly Ann Elski to the current division where she's operating, which is legal.
Secondly, it relates to the appointment process itself. And thirdly, it relates to whether indeed there was any irregularity in terms of promotion. There is an allegation that there is a promotion when she was being transferred. What I can indicate is that we have commissioned an investigation into the matter, an internal investigation at this point in time, for us to trace back essentially from when Ms. Kelly Ann was moved from where she was into the legal division to say what process was followed. Was there any irregularity that was committed, whether by commission or omission, in respect of a transfer? Was there any promotion? And that response, and for us, we would want to beg the parents of the committee to say, allow us to complete that investigation internally, because it is also a separate matter to what is being reported, the other matter which is reported in the media. Allow us the space to complete that investigation, and as soon as we have done that, we will then be able to be in a position to speak with authority in terms of the facts surrounding the matter as reported in the City Press and in the report. Thanks, Chairperson.
Anything else from Part 5?
Chair, no, I can't really add anything else. I think the best would be that we allow the process to continue and that we do a proper investigation around the matter on these three aspects and then report back to you properly once we have all the facts.
Fine. Is there anything else, Charles, on the case? No. All right. In that case,
Commissioner. Chair, thank you very, very much. I have a formal document here, but I'm going to pick and choose as we go through because we've covered a lot of the terrain here. But I want to start off, first of all, with Mr. Meynier, Honourable Meynier's comments about disclosure of information and what we may report and what we may not report. And I think it's very important for us that we put that on the record as well, so that there's a formal understanding before then dealing with the specific issues.
There is a copy of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, right? The regional act. It's been given to all members. You got it at 8:19 this morning. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So I'm going to focus on the mandate of the FIC and the legal implications of that, and the limitations that are imposed on the FIC and all other parties to it as a consequence of that act. And as we were reminded earlier on, there are two current investigations being undertaken by SARS and by SAPS at this point in time. And whatever we discuss here has the potential to impact on those individuals and the investigations and to prejudice those. So we need to be very, very careful about what we say and how far we go or not. So I need to point that out. The mandate of the FIC as set out in the Act, the original Act, is the identification of the proceeds of unlawful activities, two, combat money laundering, and three, combat the financing of terrorism and related activities. That is the core mandate, Chair. And we need to be very careful then. The information with which the FIC deals relates to matters where investigations are either pending or yet to be instituted, and where constitutional rights and privacy issues, therefore, could be infringed, and we have to recognize that and protect that. And so the Act contains very strict limitations on the disclosure of information reported to the Financial Intelligence Center. And here, for the record again, specifically Section 29, regular Section 53 of the Act. And then the FIC's treatment of that information and the activities concerning such information, specifically Sections 40 and 41, read with Section 60. And those are very important and core and central components of the legislation. And Chair, for the record, this is not something that the FIC invented. In fact, it was Parliament itself and members of the committee, probably not any of yourselves, but originally. So this is something that was debated long and hard many years ago. And any disclosure of information to entities other than the intended recipients at a premature stage would risk jeopardizing investigations and then infringe on the constitutional rights of those individuals. Now, failure to adhere to any of the limitations constitutes a serious offence under the FIC Act.
And the FIC Act, is the, at least the FIC rather, is precluded, not just in law, but also for sound operational reasons, therefore, for not disclosing this information, including confirming or denying that it has received information or passed on information relating to individuals and entities, or their transactions or behavior and so on. And we have to, and we believe very strongly, we have to treat that with absolute integrity. And so we have a standard response when asked by the Honourable Mania and others that we cannot confirm or deny the receipt of reports or the referrals. It's the way we understand the legislation given to us, and we operate within that. And I need to make the point as well, notwithstanding what Mr. Jenkins said earlier on, while Honourable Members are covered by parliamentary privilege and immunity, officials of the FIC are not covered when volunteering information to the committee. So the FIC does not have discretion to choose what it may, that it, whether it can or not disregard these legal requirements, Chair. So it's our view that we have to be very, very careful, and we expect that the situation will be looked at reasonably, and for you not to expect us to contravene our own act and self-criminalize ourselves in this process. I also want to put on record that the FIC does not share information on operational matters outside the ambit of the Act, and that includes the Minister of Finance. However, through correspondence, the letter from the Minister, I'm aware that the Commissioner of the Revenue Service has confirmed in a letter to the Minister of Finance, dated 16th September, that he had received a report from the FIC on the 18th of May relating to a senior official. So we put that on the record. And doing so, hopefully it's also addressed questions 1, 2, 3, and 10, the additional questions that the Honourable Mayneer asked in circulating his questions. And we've not disputed the fact that a report was made, but I do plead that the committee doesn't force us to disclose further information in that regard. So having put that on the record, Chair, let me then deal with the issue of the purpose of the report to SARS. And let me just, you know, when we refer matters to competent authorities, of which SARS is one, SAP, Intelligence Services are others, we determine whether we should refer such a matter to the competent authority as part of operations and executing its legal mandate based on the details of each particular matter. We look at each matter, we consider it, and then decide where it should go, to whom, who should be the recipient of that. And the decision to refer a matter for investigation is based firstly on the analysis of data, on laws, and the probabilities as evaluated by the FIC, which the FIC determines if the information is relevant to the mandate or more, or of one of, or more of the competent authorities. So if something relates to SARS, for example, therefore it will be referred to SARS as a consequence of that analysis. It's based on the information at our disposal at a given time. It's important to note, Chair, that it's worth stating as well that the FIC is unlikely to know ahead of time if a particular authority is undertaking a particular investigation. I don't know if SAPS is undertaking an investigation or not at a particular point in time. So I have to assess on the basis of information I have and then make a determination. And therefore, we often refer to more than one agency at a time. We will refer simultaneously to one or more. So if, for example, if information is found to be relevant to laws of taxation, then such a report will be referred to SARS. Conversely, if the same information suggests criminality, for example, contravention of PRECA, then it will be referred to SAPS. So we might use the same information, the same analysis, to refer to two different investigating authorities simultaneously. The Honourable Mayneer asked the question, you know, what were in the reports that was made to SARS, what were the allegations of criminality?
what's clear, as the commissioner said, there was issues of taxation raised, PFMA transgressions, and PRECA transgressions. But these are allegations which we, through our analysis, see as possibilities. They are not founded. It's required, it's up to the accounting officer, accounting authority of that particular entity to then conduct the investigation to determine whether there is anything at the basis of those allegations. And just in terms of the PRECA and the issue around SAPS, we take pride in the fact that we take obligations seriously. We're compliant with the different legislative requirements as to reporting. We've not had a complaint from SAPS in this regard at all. So, again, we leave it to you to infer from that we fulfilled our obligations or not. If I move over then to issues of timing, which was then another question, and it's an important one. The timing of a report from the FIC is always dependent on when the information is provided to it, to us, in terms of the FIC Act. And usually through the reporting of suspicious transactions of one form or another. But the point is, and it's a mistake that's often made, is that there's no one-to-one correlation between a report made to the FIC and a referral made to competent authorities for investigation. There can be no one-to-one. Very often, and usually, the analysis reveals a pattern and a trend which has to take place over time, and it's only when that trend is fully understood that if a referral will be made, and then there's a basis for the accounting officer of that entity to be able to consider and investigate. So we need to put that on the record as well. And therefore, it might well be that there's a large time during which reports come in and during which an analysis process takes place before a referral happens. And then to deal with issues of cooperation, which has clearly been the thorny one, and something that the Commissioner has spoken about. It is the FIC's responsibility, firstly, to inform, advise, and cooperate with the recipient authority of its information. But it's not unconditional, and I want to put that and emphasize that. It's limited to achieving the FIC's principal objectives, i.e. proceeds of crime, money laundering, terror financing. So that's the basis on which that information is made available to a recipient. And in addition, I need to explain that Section 42 refer, at least a 40 referral from the FIC, and the support the FIC can give to an investigation after it's referred that matter, I'll set out some of that. A referral contains descriptions of transactions or activities relating to the financial conduct of reported persons or entities, and how those transactions or activities are linked to the person or others mentioned in the referral. That's the first, and that's the essence of a report. And this information is gleaned from factual descriptions contained in reports that the FIC gets, and other information which accountable institutions or reporting institutions may give to us. Banks would be an example. It could be a range. There are lawyers in the room as well. That might be from them as well. And that's all in terms of sections 28, 28A, 29, 32 of the FIC Act. But then the referral contains something more. In addition to these factual descriptions, the referral from the FIC also contains the FIC's analysis. In other words, what we have done with that, what sense we've made of that, and of the events mentioned, and the potential links to unlawful activity. And it also, and this is very important, it contains the FIC's advice on the potential unlawful activity which the recipient authority may then wish to pursue in an investigation. So we advise, it's inherent in the referral, we advise the recipient authority on what is going down, and we provide all the documents used to substantiate our analysis in that. Right? right? So that could include bank statements, opening an account, opening account information, ID documents, etc. All of that will then be batched in a referral to the recipient authority. So the information from the FIC, the referral, provides the recipient authorities with leads, which upon further investigation may prove to show that unlawful activity has indeed taken place on the side of the targets or the subjects mentioned in that report. But Chair, it's very important to note that this information in the referral and the advice that we give is not an instruction. In other words, the recipient authority and the accounting officer usually is required to investigate any information it receives. And the point I need to make, and I think it refers back to something you said earlier on, sometimes it's very frustrating for the FIC that once a report has been made, it doesn't get any feedback as to how that information has been used and the success or otherwise of such an investigation. So, Chair, it's always incumbent on the authorities which receive the information and advice from the FIC to determine whether they can formulate allegations of unlawful activity, which thereby warrants the launch of a formal investigation within the context of their particular mandates and the legal parameters that they have and operate within. And if the investigation is launched, then only do the recipient authorities collect evidence that can corroborate those allegations by means of their own powers. Our support, the FIC's support, guidance and cooperation, consists therefore of the information and advice contained in the referral, which is made originally to the recipient authority, as well as the supply of further information in response to requests for information required of an investigation. And this is done in terms of Section 40, subsection 1A1 of the Act. So our response then to the allegation of non-cooperation would be that we provided as much of the detail as we were aware of at the time that the Commissioner received the report, and that until such time as a formal investigation had been instituted, we were not in a position to respond to any further requests for information, formal or informal. And we're aware that the Commissioner confirmed in correspondence with the Minister of Finance that on the 13th of July, as stated here, the FIC requested of him that if he provided with the details of the steps that SARS had taken by then, and with respect to the referral we passed over, as to what was happening, to enable us to work out what further assistance we could give SARS. Now, we're aware that there was being confirmation that an investigation has started, but subsequent to that, we have not received further requests for assistance. So the investigation is continuing, but I have no idea how far that is or what has happened with it. Chair, I think I've covered the key issues, the questions Mr. Mania had raised and other members had raised.
All right. Can I suggest something? You see, we can sit here in this and have an exchange, but I would like to, I've been very quiet actually to be here to have a spoken.
Thank you.
So what I want to suggest is you listen to me and then as a majority, well, consent to the office, to try to listen. You see, there's two different sets of issues. So one of the bigger issues about the exchange of cooperation, please, can people listen to that? I need some advice. Can we have the attention of all the members, please? Yeah, because I need some advice, right? Because I haven't come across a situation like this before, and there are a whole lot of practical, logistical issues as well. The next part will be in about 20 minutes. Firstly, from what I can see, there are bigger issues here beyond the person's concern. They're about issues of cooperation, the law, and so on. And I think that we can pursue. It's becoming less and less about the person's concerns than it is about the law and issues about
how different authorities should work together around these issues. And that's kind of for Parliament to decide on. Maybe we can learn some lessons from this experience and collectively decide on whether Parliament would recommend some changes to the law. The one issue this committee has subtly, almost unwittingly raised is, flowing from the IFF discussion we had the last time and the one that we follow up, because we actually took a decision for it, that we're going to invite the police committee here, not here, but with us, where we said that, okay, the FIC does its thing, refers it to SAP, and the authority concerned in this case is yourself, and then there's nothing the FIC can do. Shouldn't, I'm taking this one step forward, we think about, not a proposal, something to think about, the sort of thing we might want to think about is, the SEP is, should at least report within a certain time to the FIC, not account to it, account to its minister and parliament, on what progress there has been on a case. Because many cases end up with a case number and nothing happens after that. So it's a more generic problem. So those set of issues we can't deal with now. We can ask Antonia and Frank to draw out of this case other issues for the parliamentary committee to apply its mind to, right, on the FIC's role. The second issue I want to say is that I really think we must accept that we passed this law, and I mean we, this parliament. And I really think it's unfortunate, with due respect to the people concerned, that it's been suggested or even implied or then withdrawn and so on, that somehow the FIC director is refusing to answer. It's a frustrating way. The onus is now on those who argue that to show that actually what you have said is not consistent with the law that Parliament has passed, and that's something we'll keep open. But that's not something that we need to address now. That's the second issue. The third thing is, I am not sure what is meant by no cooperation. I really don't know. If I listen to both sides, well, not both sides, both people, what is the problem really? I actually don't think, if both sides can be proven to be misrepresented in Parliament, it's severe. But what I can see, there wasn't any concerted lack of cooperation. If there was, maybe it's misunderstandings and so on. But it's related to another point I want to make, which is at the end of the day, what is the relevance of some of the issues we're raising to the particular people concerned? From what I can see, the matter is with the SAPS. From what I can see, unless people can prove otherwise, the commissioner did act. There are some issues that the commissioner needs to reply under the chair. It's my job to do that. But before I go to that, I want to raise another matter. It's a process matter. This is a learning experience. But I think at the end of the day, I want to suggest this, right? If you disagree with me, it is your right. The chairperson is not a god. Right? So you can say, we disagree with you, and I'll withdraw it and say the majority is not. Certain times there are rules for your marriage. And that I'm not going to submit on. You can move a motion to go to the chief court's office with that, right? But in the meanwhile, while I'm chair, we are abiding by the rules. Now, on this issue, right, what I feel is this matter has now, I mean, David Mania, this matter is there. You suggested to me, and you didn't know, there wasn't any relevance on your part or matters, that, hey, why hasn't thing gone to the SAPS and so on? Actually, it's there. And it's been there for a while. Well, does it really matter in the sense now? It's there with the SAPS. That's what you said, right? And the FIC has implied something, and so has the commissioner. And I think, really, that area is covered, and we put that issue outstanding. If you want, we can deal with it now and move on. It is there with the police, right? Now, what we can look at is actually, I don't think that cooperation in the sense that might be understood in common sense language, I don't know what the commissioner meant, but for me, he doesn't seem. But what's also striking is the commissioner is, unless you can prove otherwise, anybody can, and he's prepared to give us a lesson in some appropriate form. But the lesson I've learned from this, when Mr. Mania, you raised that question, I honestly did not know what you were talking about. And I even said it's a fishing expedition. And then you persisted, and I even said, you'll recall, if there's a recording, it's there somewhere. I said, hey, guys, well, I didn't use these words, but that was my sense. But if there's something here, it's going to emerge in the public domain. And Mr. Lee said, it is. And then it took much longer. The issue of how you ended up with the report, Mr. Mania, is very worrying because, A, from what I can tell, you seem to have, you have the report. The human resources head has a report. I don't know who else, and the FIC. So that there has been a leak is a matter both the FIC and the SARS commissioner, and I'm not sure that is the matter was referred to the minister. So I think let's move on. The issue of there were misunderstandings about cooperation and so on. Maybe, you know, the commissioner is also new. To the best of my knowledge, this is his first experience. I don't even mean a DG professional service. It's probably the best first experience you had. And I don't think, if I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, Antonio, this such a matter has occurred within any official staff before. So we've all learned by the experience. The real thing is, what is the outcome? The outcome is there's no major train smashing. The issue that does arise, whether, and this is a question I have to address, in terms of the law, and trying to guide us on this, is the commissioner required to inform the minister about such a matter? And did he, in fact, do so? To be fair to the minister, I have read this thing for the first time, in fact, after you. But he is not saying that it hasn't happened. He's saying he's not being informed. Am I right, Cindy? The minister is saying in reply, whatever the number is, saying, I saw it a moment ago, he's saying, I have not been informed that the partner of the senior official in SARS is accused of having done wrong. I'm actually too late, I'm not being informed whether, so presumably the commissioner will explain whether he's done his part in terms of the law. As a chair, I have to ask that question, commissioner. Are you required in terms of the law to inform the minister on both the people concerned, and did you do so? On the issue, you've got to answer. I think, you know what we should have done, David Mania, and I've spoken to Frank Jenkins. You should have said you'd like an adjournment. You haven't done this sort of thing before. Like you say to a minister in the House, I've given you the name of the person concerned. Is it true you are investigating the person concerned? Right? And then what we could have done is got Mr. Mania, maybe one of the DA person, maybe Pule and myself, yourself, and we could have gone out for 5 minutes, and we could have seen the true lessons from it so we don't come back to. And maybe we'll write it up so that the future chair of this committee, if he or she faces a problem, will actually deal with it in an appropriate way. We could have done one of two things. Frank, do speak for yourself. As I understand what you said, summarize it once. We could have adjourned. The commissioner could have asked for it. David Mania should have asked for it in the first place. And the commissioner, he knew about the case. And then I would have also thought about it now, realized, yes, the new chairs are coming on. You know, we're going to do that. So we have adjournment. Discuss the matter. We say, look, the matter is being addressed. It will be reported on in due course in terms of the rules and regulations of SARS, FIC, and whoever else. Right? So we've learned what. All we could have, I'm told by Frank, we could have actually closed the meeting just for that period. Nobody could have been there besides the commissioner and the committee members, no staff. And we could have raised the matter. We could have said, I'm not fishing expenses. We could have said, and that's what I think, something I would like, Frank, for you to think about, that also we died, people appear before the committee. I think it may have been appropriate for the commissioner to say, yes, there is an investigation. I cannot report on it until it's being pursued further, and it's appropriate for me to report on it in terms of the law. That is all that has to be said. That might have helped. And I think we've learned our lesson there. So we've learned some lessons, right? Then on the issues that are outstanding, what you do not reply to is Mr. Mania's question. Having got you where you had, and you wrote to the man, and frankly, I can't find any problem in what you say. You know, people can say what they like, but I can't see on the surface of events. I know it's all smoke and mirrors, and I'm saying it's nothing to do with you. It's to do the political landscape for it. It's to do the South Africa of today. But see, what is happening all over the world? It's all smoke and mirrors. That's what we really have, you know, challenge, but we are where we are. But, so, what I'm saying, I can't see other than the here and there. Presumably, it is a SAPS prosecution. This gentleman's attorney is part, I would say, you know, that's not true. You produce evidence that it's true. So this has not become a part of the law. What I'm also saying is, I think I'm more or less covered. Yes, from what I imagine. Commissioner, you will have a lawyer's report by the middle of November. Now, what do you do after that? You do after that, right? Yeah, I would like to suggest that on this specific matter, my summary is we've covered the ground largely. On the outstanding issues that we need down the road, wherever it is, to discuss the law, to discuss issues around cooperation in general on such matters, and whether this parliamentary commission needs to apply its mind to proposing to the minister to consider some amendments. So that is my summary to define the framework within which further discussions take place, bearing in mind that it's now 12 minutes to 6. Can people guide me? By standing,
it will be very early to come to a conclusion on the matter of whether there was cooperation or not. To a point that we want to make cooperation. Let's take lessons learned from the country. Look at the deficiencies that might be there in terms of communication and legislation. Besides that, I would have loved look deeply into the questions I related to about this. Because if you ever see here, they would get an upper hand of information. What are you going to do? Maybe to be starting to another.
Can I say something like that? If you're not serious, can I raise something that puzzles you? I had an exchange with you. You never once mentioned to me on Monday that you've got not just one, but two fish. I discovered that somebody in Tanzania, India, I think, said, by the way, I've got one fish. So I would like to make this clear that you are not using my truth to be upfront with me. I should be able to find the name of the project. And exactly as you gave me those letters, I submitted them to the report.
Would you proposal was. On the whole theme of lack of cooperation, it is not clear to me, it's not clear to me that the commissioner has sustained that claim. I would like to know, hopefully if you can listen to the follow-up question now, in exactly what respect does the NIC, in your view, not cooperate? On the whole question of the failure to, or the allegation that you failed to inform the minister of the suspension of both individuals, I think we still need a response to that. Then, I mean, on the question of whether this matter was referred to the SAPS, we've now learned that the matter has been referred to the SAPS, which I think is a good thing. But we're still unclear, and it seems to me that even the Commission is unclear about who exactly referred this matter to the SAPS and when it was referred. That's very important. Perhaps that could come out in the chronological timeline. On the whole question of FIC and the lack of transparency and interpretation of the law, I think that I would propose that we get a legal opinion on that. I think the interpretation, FIC's interpretation of the law is incorrect. FIC's interpretation is that they can't even confirm that they produced a report. Well, the minister confirmed that FIC produced a report, so did the commissioner. Are they now in breach of FIC's laws? Well, who knows? We need some clarity. And then finally, I think we should just provide so the committee's got absolute clarity. I think you perhaps have a bit more clarity than the committee chair. What is the current status of both affected individuals? I think it's fair to assume that at least one individual is now being looked at by the international law firm, Hogan Lyles. But I'm unclear whether the other individual is being looked at, and it's possible that one individual is being looked at by the SAPS, possibly the other. We just need some kind of
okay.
Sandy, can you answer to your question?
Yeah, you must answer that question.
Yeah, you asked me why I didn't disclose to you or discuss the fact that I had put two questions. It's a fair question, and the answer is this. And the second question is, well, if you put questions, why is there not a hearing? Well, first, let me answer the second question first. There's enormous public interest in this matter, and I think it's important that this matter be dealt with in public by the...
Yeah, let me do it, yeah.
So, I'm pleased.
That's not answering the question.
So I think that's very important. On the whole question of the questions, I'll be honest with you. I mean, my experience with the National Treasury dealing in correspondence is shocking. I'm still waiting for reply to a letter on nuclear for more than a year. The National Treasury's average correspondence reply date, I think the average time it takes to respond to correspondence, more than 200 days in my case. When it comes to parliamentary questions, I have a low expectation that the National Treasury will provide...
But your point is you didn't expect them to reply to it.
I did not
expect
to get a comprehensive reply.
That's
and I did not expect to get a reply
why
this morning.
Why, how does it follow? I mean, since you're always questioning, let me question you. How does your answer my question? In other words, you could have told me, Eunice, I have asked two questions, but you know what? I don't believe they'll be answered for 4,000 years.
Yeah.
They are answering my question.
Well, let me answer that.
Yes.
First of all, I considered it irrelevant because I didn't expect to receive the...
You're not answering the question. You're repeating...
It was completely irrelevant.
No, it wasn't. The point is, relevance is related to whether you think I'm going to Ernest is going to reply or not. But hey, no. He must be challenged. You'll have to wait. I'm chairing.
Okay.
Now, I'm
so
asking you. No, then fine. Then you will go. But you are the whip.
Yes.
And you can't just be hanging in the air. Fine.
Yes.
This is the one time in the period you've been here, and for 2 years, we've never had this situation. Have you had this situation before? No. So for once for 2 years, we are paid very well. We have been elected by the masses out there. If we have to sit here like we did in the first 10 years till 3 in the morning, that's what we're going to do. You have a right to leave, but I am not stopping this meeting. If it's between me and me, we're going to do it now. It's not coming up next week again. Right. So here it is. You are telling me...
Yeah.
You'll get your time. I'm also allowed to participate. I'm chairing. No. You just say...
Not a dialogue.
I am chairing.
Okay.
Right. You must show me right here in the demo to show
show me what it is that I've asked him that is not relevant, and show me to Advocate Jenkins. Let him ask, respond to that question, whether the chair is doing what a chair should not be doing. Now, the question is, many of you could have said, and I'm insisting on this, you know, I have asked you questions, but I do not expect that it will be answered for very long. Hence, I want us to pursue this thing. That's all you have to say. It would have saved me a lot of time and energy. 2.5 hours is what I lost on Monday to try to get to some framework within which we discuss it. So I don't buy what you're saying. Your reply, and then we'll close it. We must agree to disagree. You should have said it. And there are not many chairs that will engage with you the way I do. You know that. You've been here for 6 years now.
Let's agree to disagree.
Fine. Let's move on. Right. Now, Kule. It's your turn. You can have up to whatever time you want. I'm here till 2 in the morning.
No,
I don't sleep before then, so I'm cool.
No, Chair, no, that's fine. No, I don't have an issue with your approach, Chair. It's absolutely helpful because it is also allowing us to understand certain approaches that the opposition party would want to take, because we thought that in the 5th Democratic Parliament, even the opposition at the very least should be taking a progressive stance that takes the country forward. Now, a stance that doesn't take the country forward is one that says, even when matters are sub judice before competent authorities, we are made suddenly to be drawn into where sequential reports must be drawn and all of that. Because then you see, beyond the witch hunt, it is now more of a political issue. I'm just saying, the committee must be careful. It must never be co-opted into political programs of parties that see this. You know, when we come here, even if we have got our own views in our different study groups, we try and represent what we believe is best for the country. You know, we are being told here that there's already a process that is ongoing. Certain of the issues that we are requiring clarity on are appearing to be sub judice. I think, Chair, that to the best of what has been put before us, and I agree with Tandi that we retreat a bit on some of these things, draw certain lessons, allow competent authorities that are already dealing with this matter to do so, and that at the relevant time we are then briefed. Because, you see, if we fall into the trap of feeding into an architecture that is already rehearsed and structured, you know, that you present a sequential report, you then come back, having presented the sequential report, you then come back, get an opinion on the legal framework to then assess. So now already you see, just throw in a small mean, you know it's going to come back. So already you see already an architecture is being drawn here. So we are all politicians. You know we have moved from being activists. We understand this thing. So I would plead that we try, having received what the FIC is saying and what SARS is saying on the process and what our lawyer advises on, you know, without taking anything from what committee members are raising, that we allow these competent authorities to do their work, come back and give us these briefings. Because, you see, one of the things we must avoid, Chair, and I try to make this point in the morning, we must avoid speaking to the press. Let's speak to the issues. Because if every committee meeting must become a press conference, then it's a problem. You know, then instead of addressing the issues before us and dealing with their substantive nature and understanding the facts, that is then, you see, then we are short of saying, actually, let me just give this little joke. You know, one honorable member from another party that believes it can run local government better than the one that has already run local government rises and says that actually they've got competent training for their councillors, effectively suggesting.
No, they got better training.
Yes, they've got
not
better.
Competent,
no.
Then tell them. Better training.
Yeah, no. They said better and competent.
All right.
They used the words better and competent.
All right, having heard you this morning. I'm suspicious of what you.
No. On this one, I'm sure.
I also recognize another guy. Himself, because it's public domain.
Yes.
Yeah, let's accuse him.
Yes. No.
Himself says it's better.
Yes. No, better is competent.
That's
it's fine. Yes, it's fine. So I understood him. But you see, step by step, it tends to also suggest that things done by people of a certain color in this country cannot produce the necessary competency required. Now, you might take it lightly, Chair, but this thing is actually being used to sustain a 2019 program. People are already working towards setting up offices in Joburg.
But you know, rightfully.
It's well within their rights. It's well within their rights. We are a political party, Chair. Things that happen around us, we really pay attention. We are not sleeping on duty, Chair. So I just felt we must just deal with this Johannesburg project and understand it in context as well.
But I mean, opposition parties will do what they do, and we as majority party will do, led by you, what you do. Tandy, you want to say something else? On the way forward, can you reply to the issues, Commissioner? Can you reply to one to any issue addressed to you, FIC director, and then can we move forward? But Tandy,
Chair, I think we are getting that there is no political order of events that we need to allay David's fear. In relation to what he termed
that's what we're going to do. I'm going to propose that.
Yes,
don't be playing those David's
people
David.
People want to leave.
One is not at the expense of the other.
No,
that's clarified.
No.
So you can't whitewash it, and
no.
SAP is not going to do anything.
No.
So
it's separate completely. So that's our position.
And the other issues, why did you bring Makwakwa here knowing things have got to where they are in the 20s? That's a fair question.
Well, Chair, it's a different matter because when that matter was raised, we had raised the matter with him, and also he had also sought and we're in the process from an HR perspective to provide processes of suspension. So it was a timing issue. Everything is timing. Because I did indicate to you that I take no hostages with me. I deal with the matters as they arise.
All right, you can't
can I suggest in future is we guide people. Anybody under an inquiry should not report before the committee, particularly when it's something like the SARS. And there are ways we also need to prescribe to whether it is appears before a committee. If there is an inquiry, they must say, yes, there is. I'm not sure if there is anymore. That is their right. I really feel we must take some decisions on that matter. On the also, I want to raise something else. FIC, do you want to say anything?
I think I'm covered, Chair.
Yeah,
thank you.
Fine. So the first thing, I think Tang is absolutely right. I think what we should do is over time, I think it'll give us about 6 months, is to look at the law, engage with the department and ministry and FIC about and SARS, but mainly it's about the Financial Intelligence Center and how it functions. The second thing we should look into is a report back of some sort, Commissioner, because you are free to do this. He's your colleague under your authority, so to speak. There should be some report, I think, in the first quarter of next year when you appear before the important report to say this is where the process is. Obviously, you can't speak for the SAPS, but fine, I need to ask you some legal advice from this. Is it possible? You see, what I want to alert, can the people please listen, because then I have to explain if you something. We're about to finish this. Okay, I really need some advice. I've never been in this situation as a chair before. I need to collectively decide on this. What I'm asking, Frank, and can members think about this? You see, what we don't want is a situation where there are these allegations. Okay? And they're quite severe. And FIC has said what it has, the commissioner says what he has. Then nothing happens. And nothing happens. This guy and his party and everybody else is going to jump on the bandwagon and say, you see, it was all a whitewash, this committee and sitting.
Whitewash?
No. A cover up, right? And Parliament went through the motions. But not because he says it, because we should do it. Because Parliament requires us to do it. And you must convince me we can't. We must find out from the SAPS why it hasn't proceeded or what progress there has been. If we can do that, I am pleading with this committee to agree. And finally, you know, as a chair, you need to explain to them what you told me this morning, that I could personally have taken a decision to close the meeting. Is that right? I did not need a majority vote. I'm accountable to speak. Is that what you said? Good. So whether you like it or not, that is the power I have. And you can see in some joint committees you have where other chairs just say to you, this is what we're discussing. And all of you sit there meekly and say nothing. I look at you and wonder, how? Why don't you treat me like that?
He's talking
right? No. So the point is, I do have the right, even if they don't agree with me, if it's consistent with parliamentary rules and what a chair should do, to write to the SAPS and say, can you provide a progress report? I will confer with that chair. I want you to advise me later. On dealing with the law, Cindy, you'll alert your DG and the minister that we need to address those issues. Maybe there's a need for all of these things to be addressed. On the issue I love this expression you've got. Today you've been so good, except for interrupting unduly. But you've been very good, you're quotable good. Every meeting is a press conference. That's wonderful. 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 You know, is that your own term or you got it from your partner?
Ah,
you
know.
I can't do that. But fine, what I'm saying is, that's so wonderful because you are new to this committee, right? And let me tell you, that's how it is. I've never experienced this before. And Help and I had a good laugh, right? You know what happens often? No, actually, but fair to him. The existing domain has been slightly more. You know what normally happens? The DA, right? From what I can tell from a few others here, they will issue a press statement at 7 o'clock in the morning. I think in one person's case, he does it on Sunday afternoon, it's only probably, right? Well, he drafts it. And then at about 4:10 in the afternoon, Alan gets an email. We've been good, right? We're not sitting doing, I'm not implying anything about any particular person here. We're not sitting there on the computer and sending out press releases 5 a day, right? So I'm about taking a flight from Etiquini to Cape Town. So, you know, when I get the thing, it's about 10:20 at night. And I've got a life. You believe it or not, I'm watching TV. I'm not going to give the TV up now. And then I see the SMSs coming from the journalist. Can I make something very clear, David? And Frank, you must help me. This thing is, we've written to the chairperson, Eunice Karim, right? If you Google my name, the only thing you will see is how many requests I've got from the DA on. I don't decide. Is that right, Frank? I'm merely the conduit for bringing to this committee a proposal for a meeting on a particular matter. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not me. It's
tonight we will write to the committee, via to the chair, but everybody will know now Unity is trying to hide. But that's your right, but you know, I will tell you something, I don't decide. As Mr. Mania knows and everyone knows. So, can we just do this? We are actually going to say something in the report around these issues. I will draft it together with Antonio and Frank, and you look at it. Right? What we're going to say is that we need to look into the legislation. That on this matter, we want to report back reasonably soon. Maybe the commissioner can do it before then, but at the very latest, by the first quarter. We will explore the possibilities, Frank, to actually pursue the matter with SACP as in progress if we don't get it in time. And we will actually, we are not agreeing, for the reasons Pule and others have said, at this stage, given the reports you both have given, what's more important, David? Let's talk outside this meeting. What's more important is the matter is with the SAPS, and he's made it very clear, and we can hold him to account. You can even see the report. That process of your commissioner, your lawyers, whatever the name is, the international lawyers, they are not going to undermine it, your life. We have that internal state-owned entity at the moment, and we keep getting going to court, and we keep losing on that matter, right? I think you know what I'm referring to. So, on the issue of use your right to us, and I think we've been very reasonable in saying, in the particular context of where we are, given the other decisions we've made, and given that the matter is, in some sense, maybe it is not appropriate for us. It's going to carry no value. What will carry value is if the SAPS gives the gentleman and his partner an opportunity to have his or her say and her say in the court process. Right? And what is more important is we look at the law, because I think for other reasons, IFF and the Panama Papers matter. We need to act. And the FIG says, what do you want us to do? We provide the information on the Panama Papers, and it's very hard to get conviction. Agreed? Right. We will note your objection. Right. Yeah, but the thing is, you know what? We are looking at the law.
Could have been asked.
I mean, it's your opinion. What I'm saying is,
look at those questions that relate to the case directly.
That's the case at hand,
yeah.
And you know, but you cannot. I mean, this.
Yeah, look, you cover the ground, let's agree to disagree. You've got a lot of play on this matter. I'm sure you've issued 1,000 press releases already, and you have. No one clamped down upon you, never, whatever you say, and this time I'm going to appear on TV, and whatever else. This time, I'm going to respond. Better for this thing of, yeah, the committee is... There's not enough public consultation with the damn public, their voters, their constituencies sitting with us day in and day out. There's no parliament in the world, Frank, that does that, I think, right to the last moment, right? So, in short, thank you all. Thank you to the commissioner. Thank you to the IC director. And let's see the progress in this regard. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I guess I'll have to come back tomorrow and do the Abbey. Yeah, hi. Sinikiwe.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, can you quickly just copy the resolution for me so that I compile?
No.
Then I'll do the admin tomorrow.
Oh.
Are
you sure?
Yeah, because
you could,
there's so many. Oh, you were at the
Yeah.
Do you want to come in though? Shame.
Tomorrow, I'm not planning to come in.
Good. Good. Okay, you'll just send it in. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes.
Right.
I was not planning to
just
come
make
in.
Make a photo set of that.
Yes, let me make a copy.
Great, and
photo.
I'll copy them. How many recordings did you do?
I did two.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The meeting didn't end while the end was starting.
Was it political party?
Yes.
Do you want me to save it?
Yeah.
Or to put it on?
Do you know how to do it?
Because what I can do, I can put it on a hold up until the battery dies, or I save it.
Save it.
Okay.
Long